In respect for all of your time, I'd like us to start on time. Thank you. Good evening, and thank you all for joining us tonight. My name is Steve Booth. I'm one of the five directors that serves on the CSB Board of Directors, and I've been asked to facilitate this meeting tonight. Seated before you tonight are Mimi Morris, CSB General Manager. To her right is Ryan Stolbus, who is a consultant to the district regarding water rights. On my far right is Andrew Ramos, who's been serving for the last many months as the chief counsel. Unfortunately, he's announced that he's leaving his law firm and taking on a new horizon in his career, so he's only got another month with us, and we're all sorry to see him go. Somewhere around the room, on the far left is Travis Bohannon, who is our chief of plant and our acting director of operations. Next to him are Lisa Matos and Dan Scalin, who are the principal consultants that have been working with the district on the integrated water master plan. I know in the audience is Director Linda Butler. I don't know whether Director Meege or Director Janko are in the room. I know Director Pohl is not available tonight. I want to thank Gail Bullen, who's taking the photographs. My understanding is that Ms. Bullen will be recording this meeting for us and providing that audio recording for posting on the CSB website. So thank you, Gail. Was that for Gail or because I thanked her? Briefly, I want to outline for you the agenda that we have planned this evening. Introductions have already been accomplished, and a welcome message I'll be reading to you in a moment. And then we're going to ask the consultants to review their findings from phase one. That information, of course, is that story map that has been posted on the CSD website for quite some time now. We will allow a short period of time for any follow-up questions or comments with regard to phase one, which was about the water supply. And then the consultants will give us a brief presentation on phase two, which was about water demand. And again, we'll allow a short period of time for comments or questions about phase two. And then we're going to get into the presentation of phase three findings, which is, as my description is, where those two intersect, where the supply and demand intersect, what that means for the district, and what alternatives we might be exploring for ways to augment supply and or reduce demand. And we're going to allow quite a bit of time for questions and comments regarding that, which is, that's really kind of the new presentation tonight. I will advise you up front that I have two or three speakers who will be given extra time. I have dozens of requests from citizens, many of you who are probably sitting in the room, to allow time to some specific speakers who have some information to share and some questions to follow up. We will, however, be placing the microphone out here and allowing anyone to step up and make a comment, ask a question. Again, phase one, I'd ask you to restrict your questions to that component. Phase two, the same. Phase three, we're kind of wide open at that point. And we'll take all questions and comments. I will be calling specifically on some folks who are scheduled to speak a little longer than our standard 3 minutes. And again, that's at the request of dozens and dozens of emails from citizens locally who have asked to give these individuals additional time. So out of respect for those requests, we're going to take care of that. This integrated water master plan is perhaps the single most important project CSB leadership and the community face today. Our agenda tonight includes those three primary components, as I mentioned a moment ago, we'll address how to ensure an adequate supply of potable water for our homes and businesses in the community. I think I've outlined all of that. I'm going to turn it over, Lisa. Are you prepared to give the summary on phase one?
Sure.
Lisa Maddow.
You
want to
stand here?
Sure. Thank you. Just out of curiosity, show of hands, how many attended the first town hall? Okay, great. Okay, how about the second one? More. Okay, good. Repeating. All right. Well, thank you for being here this evening. I saw half two-thirds of the hands go up. So just as a brief introduction for myself and Stan, and he gets up here. Explain too, but we are the engineering consultants. We are supporting this project. We have extensive backgrounds. If you look at our names and our titles, we're professional engineers and we have spent multiple decades in our careers and in our education. But we come to you today with an engineering perspective. So we are just one part of the discussion that you're having. We're the ones that come with having run the numbers. We've done the math. We've applied the best engineering principles with the best available data. So today our charge is to follow best practice and look at the system. We take what I call a least cost planning approach, which is to offer you, you know, here's the, you know, options are on the table in quantity. That's a lot of what we'll talk about today. There are future phases coming. So we're going to talk about capital costs once we talk about which options are feasible for supply. We do this as standard practice. We do compare supply and demand. We look at it, we call it scenarios under different conditions, and we analyze the options. We talk with all the community. This is the largest group I have ever had, so congratulations. You know, I really am excited about how passionate you are to be here, to listen, to participate. We do a lot of planning. I'll do planning for cities of 500,000 and five people will show up. It's honestly really disappointing because we do a lot of hard work to do the analysis and investigations and to do, you know, really important capital planning and decide to spend hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars to tens of millions. I've even worked in a $1 billion project in Colorado. So we really, you know, come with robust analysis. We want to have a robust public discussion tonight. You know, you can think of this as the turn where we've done all the blood tests, we've taken all the CT scans. You know, this is the appointment where you come in and you get kind of the diagnosis and the options to kind of, and, you know, when you have a gap, and in our case, we're going to explain that to you, like, what are your solutions, you know, and your options to kind of do some treatment to increase resiliency for your water system and do better water management for your community. So that's where we are, and that's our perspective. And then after we do more capital planning and analysis, there will be documentation, so there will be, you know, future options to, or opportunities to comment on the work that we've done. And we still have a lot of documentation to share, so you should have, everyone should have their the story map. So in addition to the presentation I have tonight, we have, and you'll see this graphic, you know, on the website. You should all have this or be able to have a handout or get the QR code. We are putting together, and on the CSD website, it's a version of like a Wikipedia. We've done this in three phases where we've talked about supplies, we've talked about demands, and now we're talking about putting them together and what the balance looks like. So we want a water balance to be running in what we call an average year, which is kind of like your typical normal precipitation. This is what we expect to see kind of in normal times. And then, of course, to do prudent planning, you'd look at it in stress times, which is drought for you. And what we call it kind of a normal case, we label that, you'll hear a lot, average year tonight, that's kind of the normal case. And then we're going to talk about drought, which is worst case, okay? And worst case for your system, this is your data, your flows at the Michigan Bar, you know, USGS, that's what you're measured on. And basically, think of this as just like the checkbook. We're looking at all the income, all the supplies. We're looking at all your expenses, which is all your demands off the system. And then we're trying to be conservative and really come up with, you know, what options really matter, you know, when you have a gap. Just like, well, what's our options at home? We can either get, you know, get more income, get a second job, or take on more hours or whatever, or expenses. We can do something to reduce our expenses. You know, those are your options. So that's how we're running this whole perspective, is demand versus supply or supply income. Overall, you want to be conservative and make the system more resilient. That's what we're after. So we did this by simulation. We do this by analysis. So we have really good data for your hydrology. We're really lucky to have 115 years worth of river flows measured right here at the Michigan Bar. We account for system losses. We account for your existing demand. We have proposed demands. We went over that in advance for that. We have what happened if you there's a drought and you're asked to conserve some. How much does that help? And how much would you be willing to conserve is definitely on the table. So that's kind of your least cost, just to save the water that you have. And then there's options for more supply, which is seeking smart investments, right? We want to invest in the things that matter, the things that, you know, get us enough water to help meet any shortfalls. So we're asking ourselves these questions, like, are we meeting the demands and under what conditions? And we test for what's called shortfall. And shortfall for us means this, you know, supplies are less than the demands. The demands are greater. That means your taps are dry. That is the thing we absolutely want to avoid. Okay? So we've done this, as I mentioned, in three phases. So the first phase, we talked about supply, became the first town hall and talked about that. And there's a story map that really details that. Second one is demands. We looked a lot of trends in your consumption, your past conservation. And we then looked at proposed development by lot type. We are providing data from the CSD that has provided it from the developer. We don't, like, make up demands or on the development side or anything like that, and we are not directly connected to any of the developers. I know some of that we've come up. We did a lot of analysis based on proposed developments that were made by lot types. You actually have a lot of data about that, sometimes more than we're given in other communities, that you have a master plan here, and I'll be sharing more about that when we get to the demand story map. And then we're going to talk, now we're in the phase of the story options. I've got a little format glitch, but big picture, the overview, and the, your supply and demand, we're comparing them both. We evaluated for the resiliency. We've identified that the stress on the system is significant, particularly under drought. So you have gaps in supply and demand under drought conditions. You have them right now under your worst case drought. So sitting here, you should take away the option in our view, my Dan's view, is doing nothing is not a good idea. That is not what we're recommending. You definitely need to make some change in your community. So that, and we're gonna talk about those options today. We're gonna talk about and try and give you a roadmap. Now we, sometimes everyone wants all the answers today. We'll give you the best answers we have right now based on the data that we have. And we're going to make suggestions to you, and we're going to give you a roadmap on how to do further investigation and follow those tracks to make your system more resilient. That's kind of the big picture. So the story map is available to you. It goes through a lot of detail about your system, the infrastructure, the three reservoirs that pulls water when you pump. We pump river flows, as you likely know or hopefully know from the Consumnes River. It comes and there's significant water rights permits. There's a very detailed memo that Brian Stolfus is here tonight, evaluated and prepared. I highly recommend you go to the story map. If you really want to get in the lead, there's a link to the permit. There's a link to the memo. Like, we kind of show all our work there in terms of how much water is there, in which reservoir, under what time period. And we run a very detailed analysis. It's a monthly time step. We do the checking book every month. Like, this is what can come in. So this is your income. This is what you're allowed to pump. And working with Travis and Michael, we know we have the records on how much was pumped. We did a very careful evaluation on your historical boat flows and how much water you could pull under each month under each type of condition. And we had all our math reviewed by Ryan Stolfus's group to make sure that we were using the permit amounts, per the permits. And there are requirements. When your permit gets below 70 CFS, your pumps are shut off. So that's the main thing to know. You are a more junior water right holder on the Consumnes River, and that's kind of what they do. That's like layered. So that you are from the river, you pump into reservoirs, you have permitted storage rights in those reservoirs. That's how the system master plan was designed. There were there's the rights to hold water in Calero, Chesboro, and Clementia. And we do what's called usable storage. I went over this before, but that's, you know, we don't, it's not that we down to dry, dead, cracked earth. We use what's called jet pool, and then we have usable storage, you know, and you don't overtop your reservoirs, obviously. So we have a smaller amount of volume that we're running off of. And then you also use a one water concept where you leverage a lot of your recycled water. It's also a solution for wastewater discharge for your community. You do not get to discharge your water to the river from your wastewater treatment plants. You need to apply it. You either apply it, and right now you're applying it on your golf course, you apply it on the Van Vleck Ranch, but you do not have the option to discharge that water, the wastewater, to the river without fines. So that's just, and that's valuable water. I will say many communities actually wish they had a more robust recycled water system. Many communities I work in, that's not on the table. And we looked at it for both your current system, and we also have estimates for future recycled water, too, that are our estimates. You want to pause there on supply and take any questions on the supply side for your agenda?
So is there anyone that has any questions or comments regarding the information that's been provided in the story map or just summarized by Ms. Maddox with regard to water supply? Please step up to the microphone. And if others wish to speak, if you just line up behind this first speaker, then we can try to do this as efficiently as we can. Again, we'll ask that you keep your comments or questions restricted to supply at this point in time. And we will restrict comments to just a few minutes. Please give us your name and your comment or question.
My name is Kathy Ann Atkins, and I can just ask that the presenters speak a little bit slower. It's a lot of information.
Okay, sure.
All right, fair enough. I did notice a motor mouth myself a time or two.
Is it possible for me to just bring up?
I'm sorry?
Is it possible for me to bring out a point that I'm going to make, or was going to make later by...
Sure, if it relates to a supply, Janice, please feel free.
I want you to look under recycled water. It says the current supply is 437 acre feet. The future system supply is 955 acre feet. Average precipitation years. I want to point out two things. We're increasing the size of the community by about one half. Our current supply is 437 acre. We're, again, half that we're increasing the community. So that means we should be around 650-ish on the future supply. It's 955. So why would they have that? If you look at it, it's mathematically impossible. If you look at it, it says average precipitation years. So why would they use an average precipitation years number when they're analyzing drought conditions? So this is all part of my speech that I'm going to give a little bit later, but I wanted to point that out. Thank you.
Did you wish to respond to that?
So, actually, I'll defer, not to you, but till later, because we actually have multiple slides on that.
Yeah, we have a lot of slides on this.
That will actually address that specific topic. So hold the thought, it will come up later.
And just a reminder, it's not all residential development that's left here.
There's not just residential development left, there's also non-residential development that's zoned in the community yet to be constructed. So we are running that by a lot of times and by zoning. So just a reminder on that. So if the map doesn't look like it has that, it's because we're doing by specific type of land use, by specific lot size. We've done careful map on that.
I'm not going to take questions from the floor. Please, if you wish to ask a question or speak, you need to get in line and use the microphone so that everyone can hear your question and the answer. Janice, if later the presentation doesn't respond to your inquiry, of course, we'll give you an opportunity to come back up and ask some more. Is it John that's in line?
Yes. Yes.
Please, come up, please.
Good evening. My name is John Van Dorn. I have a few questions for you.
Raise the mic up, John. Thank you.
I said, good evening. My name is John Van Dorn, and I have a few questions for you. The first one is, have you included Lake Clementia as a source of drinkable water in any past studies?
In terms of past studies?
Yes.
And we've used it in terms of the waterway permit of usable quantity.
So you have used it as potable water in past studies, correct? That's your answer?
We have used it as, no, we said that it needed to be investigated further.
Okay.
Same as groundwater.
Can we use the water in Lake Clementia as a source of drinkable water?
That's a question for Ryan Stolten.
Well, drinkable water, well, in terms of drinkable water.
So there is technically, and this isn't a frequently asked question, we came back for some clarification. It is a really important clarification. So you have multiple regulators. There are two regulators principally. One is the State Water Resource Control Board. They control the rights, and they control the rights to pump into all three of your reservoirs by the permit. And that's, so we're talking quantity. So there is a secondary regulator, another regulatory agency. That's the Department of Public Health, the Division of Drinking Water. They permit your water treatment plant and ability to put treated water into your distribution system and serve that water. So there are actually two parts to this. So when we're doing the checkbook and we're looking at supplies and we're looking at income, we're looking at quantity and rights. And do you have the right to get that water in the reservoir from Lake Clementia? You have three reservoirs. So you are technically permitted, and that's the memo was very detailed that Ryan Stolfitz went through on this. You are technically permitted to do the first part, to store water in Clementia. So then the second question becomes, what do we do about that to make it treatable if you already use it and put it into the distribution system? So the second part of that step has not been completed. So it's a two-part answer. Step one, yes. Step two, not, no, or you can decide, not yet. That's, we're not deciding, we're just here to give you the information and how much that quantity matters to you. And that's part of the story that you're going to hear later with the scenarios. It's how much does that Clementia water help you? If you have groundwater wells, how much does it help you? You know, other choices you have. There's just a lot of choices.
Let me rephrase the question.
Hold on, John, please.
If I may turn to Ryan, and I'd like to seek some clarification. My understanding is that we are not currently permitted to use water out of Lake Clementia for potable water purposes. And my understanding is that in order to make that water meet drinking water standards would also require additional steps. Is my understanding correct?
So as far as my, what I work on, which is the water rights part of it, there are two water rights on the lake. There's a license that allows the water to collect the lake to collect water from its own watershed. That license is non-consumptive. You are not allowed to use that for municipal purposes.
That's runoff water, right?
Right. So water that flows into it when it rains on its own. That license you are not allowed to use. There is a second water rate permit, which is the municipal permit, where you pump water from the river into the lake. That one does allow you to use the river water for municipal purposes. So the State Water Resources Control Board says you can use that river water that you put in Clementia for municipal purposes. The question is the Department of Public Health, which is not what I work on. They may have a problem with using that water.
Let me ask the question then. As I stand here at approximately 6:24 on Thursday evening, May the 30th, do we have a legal right to use the water that's in Lake Clementia as drinking water?
No.
Thank you. Now, let me ask you this.
One more, please, John.
Just one more question. If we applied for a permit to convert Lake Clementia, how many permits are in front of us with the water?
Does anybody in the room know?
So, as far as permit with the State Water Resources Control Board, you're good. There are no permits needed. You have all the permits you need with the State Water Board.
Okay, how about all the other agencies that are going to require this? How many permits are in front of us?
Yeah, the public health one.
Amendment. We talk about it.
John, can we move to the next speaker, please?
Fair.
You can come back up again later, sir.
Thank you.
Hi, John.
So far. I have time, but this is pertinent, and it'll get out of sequence.
Get closer to the microphone, please.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I want to point out that Lisa's categorization of the 4,400 acre feet of usable storage in that. The 4,400 acre feet of usable storage that shows up on this presentation is less water than was given in the water supply assessment that we sent to the county, telling them in 2016 that we had the water to do this project. That was almost 4,800 acre feet. The other thing I want to point out, and I'll get into it later, is those are gross numbers. They're gross for a lot of reasons, but they're gross as it relates to the net. And the confusion over the division of water quality and the division of water rights is significant, because I made a call to the division of water rights to understand what CSD's consultant, Wes Yost, said to them at the time that they sent back the letters that CSD got. And essentially they said at the time they got those requests from Wes Yost, they were under the impression that CSD was talking about water to which they had a legitimate right to use for potable use. That's what the Water Board told me. And it turns out that they were quite surprised when I told them that there were some other issues I thought were on the table, and I referred to them from our potable water diversion permit, the one Ryan talked about is 16162, and they said, oh, okay, could you send me that permit? And I said, yeah, I'll send you the permit, and I'll send you some stuff to go with it. So right now, as a result of that meeting, I was asked to come back to the state. And I went back and I had a joint meeting with the Department of Water Rights, the Division of Water Rights, and the Division of Water Quality. I met with both of them at the same time. Where I think we're going to have to go here is probably to take the license on Lake Clementia, the 13485 license, which is for recreational use, and you're going to have to convert that to a municipal license. Now, the reason you have to do that is that back in 1979, okay, there was a protest when CSD went to build the Calero Reservoir, replacing an old Guadalupe reservoir they did not build. And for the very first time, the Water Board was asked if, not Reggie Marietta in those days, the Pension Trust Fund and the Bank of America, could use Lake Clementia to store water from the river. They said, yes, you could. And they listed in the permit, okay, all of the places that you could store it, which essentially were Clementia, 850 acre feet, Calero, 2,610 acre feet, and Chesborough that they reduced to a standard and always allowable 1,250 acre feet. What is directly below that in the permit is the condition and caveat of the total storage that you can use. Because when they created Clementia, they put a total of the three holes we have in the ground of 4,900 acre feet in there. There were five protests. And to appease the protests, after the hearing, they ordered Water Order 79 79-13 and Water Order 79-23. Both of those told the downriver people that they were approving this condition, but they were not adding more storage. The net result of that is you have 3,900 acre feet of diverted water. Put the dam water any place you want, but you've got 3,900 acre feet. But you've got a complication in that because it crosses against another permit that's for recreational use and has quality restrictions. So now you know what the real story is, and I'll go into the rest of this later on.
Thank you, John. Well, Brian, if you know, I think I have heard that we have permit renewals pending at the state. You're saying yes. Do we know how long those have been pending?
I filed 5 years. 5 years. The time extension was filed on October 7, 2020.
So we're over four years into it.
Yeah, it's okay. Sitting there with no action yet.
Thank you. Sir, if you'd state your name, please.
My name is Steve Frischman. I'm in the south there. My product of capacitor, I think there's two parts to that. You actually have the HO molecules, but you have to have the capacity to make that water potable, you know, and process it. Is that going to be addressed as well?
So there's process of pulling the water up out of the river or having it drain, and then we treat that water at the wastewater treatment plant at the base of Chesbro in order to be able to send it to our homes for use for both landscaping and use in our homes.
Yeah, I'm saying, is that going to be addressed as well, the capacity to do that?
So the models include capacity and treatment, yes?
But my understanding of a while ago that there was something was wrong with one of the processing plants. Has that been ready?
Travis is our chief of plant. Last report I had from Travis, both plants were up and running. We do in the summertime have a problem with manganese, which requires extra filtering and can stress the filtering plants, and it requires a little more maintenance. But we're at full capacity treatment right now, Travis? He's saying yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Who's next, please?
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Fadigati, and I attended the last meeting and just learned total transparency to Janice Eckert's point. I'd like to really make sure that you clarify very clearly the 437 acre feet, I believe, in your storyboard says that's for 2,700 units, I would assume houses. Then it goes on to say the 955 is for 1,000. And I very clearly think the group here, as homeowners, we need to understand what is the split between both those numbers, between houses and commercial, which I'm sure you can provide us, because the Rancho Marietta Inn is already up and operational. So I would assume there are full usage, one usage, and that would be in the 437. So what other large commercial usage would be in that other number?
The slides are coming with pie charts and division.
Okay. Okay. So I just want to make sure to be very clear. I think the group here deserves that answer.
Right. And so we have a commitment that we will be shown. Okay. And again, if you're not satisfied with what you see, please step back up. We discuss phase three, and we'll seek clarification.
And for a second point, to your point about the water permits, I've been on the phone with the water district a couple of times this week, and they told me the recreational is a non-consumable license. They said that we would have to go through a whole new license process for consumable water. Right now, the consumers is a fully appropriated water system, which means that they're not really relinquishing that many more permits. I'm a novice here. I spoke to two different people to make sure I got it correct and the same information, and I was told both times, emphatically, that it would be a whole new permit process to turn Clementia into a consumable water source.
So I believe you said you spoke to the district twice. Did you mean the water board?
I meant the water board. Right.
Thank you for that clarification.
Actually, just so that all the homeowners here understand, when we convert the water in Clementia to a consumable water drinking source, that means no recreational use. And that is a big selling point for our community. So thank you.
Yeah, and that point will be addressed. It is one of two paths. I've seen some documents. So we'll get more information on that. Yes, sir.
My name is Pat Reeves, and I'd like to address, first of all, the first question.
Can you pull the microphone a little bit? You're tall, sir. Thank you.
How about that? I'd like to address the first answer to the question you have on here, number one. You make it sound so simple to get this water converted.
What are you looking at?
Put the hand out. Question one. Talks about state permitting. And you guys are saying that, well, El Dorado Hills had it done. When was that permitted? And who are these other sources that were permitted within this particular region?
So if somebody here knows that, we'll ask them to answer. We did engage a company called West Yost, which I think Mr. Merchant referred to earlier, to talk about, and Ryan addressed it as well, ways that we might use Clementia water. They gave us examples, two paths. One was to stop the use of the water, the reservoir for recreation purposes. The other, I believe, was a legislative path to actually get the legislature to allow us to maintain recreation and use it for potable water. Does anybody in the room know when El Dorado made that change?
I'd like to know the date that it was permitted.
It followed on work I did from them in 2004 to 2006.
So Ms. Matalor, she did 2004 to 2006.
Well, conditions are one hell of a bit different nowadays than they were back then.
That's right.
I also, if you remember, our first meeting was the very first meeting the CSD board had to allocate the contract to you. And do you remember the question I asked you?
And do you wish to restate it now? That would be
yes,
a fair way.
Have you ever had a failure?
A failure?
Yes.
And
you said
no.
Yes. It's on tape, so I'm just telling you. You said yes. You had a failure with the assessment.
A failure of what? I'm sorry.
I'm not sure.
The assessment. The entire
okay.
All
right.
I'm not following you in terms of assessment as a failure. We do, we exhibit shortfalls and come up with solutions. Is that what you're referring to?
You informed us. It's on tape. When I asked the question, the board tried to stuff it under the table and just wait a minute, don't answer that kind of thing. But eventually you answered, and the question your answer was yes.
Okay, well, I need more context, please.
Yeah. So, Mr. Reeves, let me just see if I can try to clarify your question. Are you asking her whether or not a plan that she's prepared
an assessment that Matt has conducted.
Has it been rejected by the governing body? Is that the question you're asking?
No. Failed.
I don't know what failed means.
They put out the plan, told them what they needed to do, and it was a failure. And that was the question to you.
Okay.
So your company has had failures.
If you have
at least one.
If you have some additional info regarding that, we can certainly take a look at it. Because I'm sorry, I'm trying really hard to understand your question.
Well, it's not a question.
Okay.
Why? But if you look back on the original meeting when she was first introduced, as you will hear it.
Okay.
All right. I want to put a support on the lady back here that we just got here. Because I talked to the state water resource.
I'm going to give you about 30 seconds for Mr. Reeves, and we'll call him in next
here's
speaker.
Here's what I was told. One, on the record, because I was trying to get something about probability on the record, there was a serious licensing backlog due to water conservation program integration, plus incorporation and analysis of ongoing drought and climate change factors. So, just obtaining a change of use license, a change of use license will be problematic for now, off the record. Obtaining a change of use license to draw water from small rivers and creeks above the Delta region, like the consumers, ha- has become extremely difficult for any draw over 250 acre feet. This is due to the board's applied restrictions and intense scrutiny of current and future drought and climate change impacts happening to these rivers and creeks. Thus, making a use change to draw 900 plus acre feet of water annually, highly questionable.
Okay, thank you, sir. That information really, is probably more pertinent to phase three in terms of what our options are, but thank you for that information. I'm going to take one more question or comment on this phase, and then I'd like to move to the next phase. If there's residual questions, we'll try to catch you all up at the end, okay? Please state your name and what's your question or comment, please.
Yes, my name is Eileen Shepherd, and I live up north. I've been here for 22 years, and I've attended each one of these meetings, and I have to say every single time I've not understood why the money that's being paid out by us, why people that are making these decisions and telling us how things are going to be or work out, why they are not working collaboratively with John Merchant and Janice Eckert, who obviously have so much depth and knowledge and background, seemingly beyond their many areas of their own knowledge. I don't understand why.
Thank you. And in order to obtain, so first off, the consultants are not going to tell us what to do. That's a decision that has to be made by the five directors on the board of directors, whether or not to adopt a plan based on the consultant's report that will be finalized and presented to us. In order to obtain additional input from individuals such as John or Janice is precisely why Director Butler and I pushed very hard for this series of town hall meetings, and both John and Janice have been providing information and questions which has been funneled over to the consultants. So what impact or influence that has maybe remains to be seen. Your point is well taken. I appreciate it. We're going to move on to the presentation on phase two, if we may, please.
Thank you. We have appreciated all the questions and the feedback on the first supply questions. It is one final point. John Merchant brought up the $4,800 for the water supply assessment. The rights that you have, you dynamically use that water. That's this, you're forgetting the temporal aspect of this. So you pump hourly, daily. There's monthly. We did our analysis at monthly, and Dan's group did an hydraulic model at even a more detailed scale. So we can talk about both those models that we did in excruciating detail, I feel like. It is standard practice for the analysis that we do. So I will say this, you know, when you look straight up numbers across the top, it may not add up, but it's because you haven't taken into account that at the same time we're pumping into the lake, you're taking water out, you're taking the treatment plant and you're using it. So that is all, again, within the water rate permit that you have. So just a reminder on that, and if you want more details on that, it's on the supplies right now. We've done our best to explain it. If you feel that the story map is deficient, then this is your question. This is your time to ask those questions. We can flesh that out more. I want that to be a living, dynamic document for you, where everybody can understand the water system that you have. Everyone can understand this snapshot of analysis on the demands that we make with the best available information. So that's the other story map that you have. You have an existing infrastructure right now. You have existing treatment plant. I mean, all planning is done as a snapshot of time with the best available data and with a forecast or prediction. That's the analysis that we're doing. And that's just our best practice, is to go through and step through and understand our system. That's why we've taken so much time and rolled up our sleeves with the staff, and listen to the community, to try to answer so many questions for you. So your home for the questions and the answers is, for us, I mean, and we got asked to do additional responses to the frequently asked questions through the staff, but we are really putting a lot of our information on this right now. So please use that. I know it may feel too long to read. It's a lot of scrolling. It's a lot of detail. It's a lot of math. It's way more than you're getting from this meeting. So it's very hard for us to take something super complex and distill it down and try and explain it to you and give it to you in terms that, you know, you can really understand. So please do ask us to slow down, ask us questions. That's, we're here, you know, to try and walk this through with you. So we went through the income side, the supply side. This is the demand side, your expenses. So there was the original master plan. This is a master plan community. It has projected golf course demand. It has commercial zone demand. It has the three reservoirs. It has growth around the reservoirs. This is your map. This is the map that was filed that the county approved for the master plan for this community. Now, things build out over time. Things change. You have to have actually people willing to invest their money and develop the land and sell the homes and sell and develop the businesses and run those businesses to have a community, right? So it evolves over time. So this is, we've done a snapshot of existing demands. We looked at lot type. We looked at your data. We looked at recent trends. I talked a lot about that at the last town hall. There's a lot of details. You've conserved as the community. There was a law for larger systems, 20 by 2020. You met that with your gallons per capita per day. You reduced it to over 350 gallons per person today. You are down at 200, you met your goal of 247. It does bounce around a little bit. A lot of that's climate. It could be a wet year or dry year or whatever, but your demands move around. So we try and like kind of benchmark or get you the best baseline that we can. You have a number of approved lots already in the system, and then you have proposed projected lots that are also, we were provided to us with detailed lot maps. Those are in what are called CAD drawings. They're very detailed lot flat lines, just like you see the parcel map that eventually comes to the county. It looks just like that. We downloaded that into our computers. We used CAD, we converted to GIS. We did a really detailed indoor and outdoor analysis on what lots are coming, what size are they, what do we think the demands are inside, based on serving the number of people, because it's people that use water, not just your pictures sitting around inside your home, right? And then we have the outdoor demands, and that's scaled by lot size. So we did a super detailed analysis. There was the original proposed, so you have the existing development. This was a dated map from 2021. We're given actually a more detailed map as things are building out, and some areas were taken off of future development. So we were given the most detailed information, you know, possible at the time. And that's what the, you know, quote-unquote projected build out is. So we have, again, all that you see developed was included in existing, and then all that we see that is highlighted is either, and it's, there's a legend, but it's either under development, recently finished, or pending, or proposed not to be developed, even though it was planned to be that way originally. So we did our analysis, and there's a lot of details and more detailed tables and things in the advanced story map. But in summary, you use on the order of 1,716 acre feet a year. We have projected kind of on the order of 1,574 acre feet. So you add those up, you get on the order of 3,290 acre feet. Some of the proposed developments, like some of the non-residential commercial, is zoning. That's kind of some, you know, there's maybe some information that was provided us from the CSD about what those properties may become versus, you know, what the zoning is. So there is, you know, I will say a measure of uncertainty in the non-residential part, but we did our best and we are conservative. You know anything about engineers, Dan, and I tend to be conservative when there's numbers of uncertainty. So we did our best and on that analysis. There is a lot of detail on the story map, so please go there if you have more questions. And if there's any more right now, and I'm happy to answer them. And so, thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody have specific questions about the demand? Janice?
For anyone who was at the last board meeting, could you go back to that last slide, please? Okay, I want you to point out something. Numbers don't lie. The baseline potable water existing demand is 1,716 acre feet. Okay? The projected, again, 1,574. Again, we're increasing the size of the community by half. Okay? That doesn't add up. But I mentioned this to Ms. Maddow, and I told her, I said, this doesn't make sense. So I went back to your 2010 study, and I looked to see what was the demand in 2010. It was 1,710 acre feet, almost the identical number. I thought that was kind of interesting. Particularly since 2010, we built an 83-room hotel. We built the Marietta Gardens. We've got some commercial buildings. We've done part of the retreats. The FAA building was converted into a thriving church. Equestrian Center has expanded, et cetera, et cetera. So we have almost identical amount of usage. So I said, how's that possible? She says, well, the community has cut back on the water usage. Okay, yeah, that's true. Still doesn't explain that differential in those numbers. And here's the other thing. She says now there's a lot more commercial, but I'd like to know where that extra commercial is going in because I'm not seeing it. But here's the other thing. When I went back to 2010, I found a letter from the Department of Public Health that was written to the CSD, and it said that the number in 2010 was understated by 8%. Now, Ms. Maddox said that the Department of Public Health took the word of a misguided resident, and that the quotes on that letter were inaccurate. She straightened it out later. Well, I want everyone in this room to know I was that misguided resident. Okay, and here's the deal. They did not take my word for it. They asked me for my proof. I gave it to them, and they said, we're going to have to research this. We'll get back to you. They researched it. And you know what they came up with? They came up with that 8% number. I didn't have access to those numbers to come up with how far it was off. I knew, like, these numbers are off. I knew it was understated. And why would you understate the potable water? Because then there's more water for the developer houses. Okay? And the quote that Lynn Mattis said was inaccurate. Was a word-for-word quote from your 2010 study.
Sir, would you step up, raise the microphone to your level, please give us your name.
Jim Farrell, hard act to follow. After the last meeting, I pointed out to the consultant that I sent a letter to the board about on this demand issue. And I think the audience needs to know this as we look through the scenarios that we're going to see in a few minutes. Well, first of all, I want to say we've got a lot of good data here. But one of the things we need to know in looking at the data is this demand model is based upon connections that existed on December 31st of 22. You know, this is 24. And since, you know, this time, we've got more than 600 approved projects that are going on right now in this community. There's an additional 697 that are on the board. So when you look at these demand models that we're going to see here in scenario one and two, just be aware it's missing half of the demand that's already been approved and is being built right now.
Mr. Merchant?
Hi, I'm the second member of Janice's club. The baseline number at 1716, and I didn't do this number, the water board did it and pressed it at the meeting I went to. They're claiming we're up at 1837. That's the number we're reporting to them. So at some point, you should reconcile the fact that your baseline number is lower than what the water board thinks it is. The other thing I want to know, can you back up to your development map?
Sean, please speak into the mic.
I'm sorry. Can you back up to the 697?
Mm-hmm.
Just to clarify, it's what the water board told me, not what I told them. And they only use the numbers we report.
And you have some of the backup.
We have a. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Go ahead, Travis. No. Let me give you the mic.
We had a conversation about this briefly, and the numbers that you told, the numbers that you told me a couple times were different than the ones that I actually report. We were supposed to get together and confirm those numbers, and you have yet to get back to me.
I'm waiting on that, yes.
The numbers, they're going off of the numbers that I report to the state, and I report those based off the meter reads that I get. I don't know where you're getting your numbers from the state or what website, but I know just based on the little bit of conversation we had, our numbers are different.
Yeah, I got that number that I just referenced was not a number that I calculated, although I pulled these things apart and adjusted them into water years versus calendar years. But that's the number they gave me.
Okay,
I'm just asking you to reconcile it. Could you go back to your development map for just a second? I'd like to know the status in your demand of the 39-acre parcel that's adjacent to the CSD building. There's a 39-acre parcel that's in the development plan of the county, and it's on the county map, and it will be evaluated with the rest of the plan. There's 39 acres up there. There's 82 houses and apartment buildings that are sitting on that plot, and I want to know if they're being considered in demand. Plus, they've also inserted a park up there as well, which would require some type of water, and I wonder if that factors into the equation at all.
Yes, we take into account the zone map. We have all the parcel maps. We carefully went over that with CSD map for the acuity QCR work. Map and the data we were given was provided inaccurate.
Well, I'm having a lot of trouble reconciling that number, so at some point in time we'll get back to you and we'll let you know what we see. But I don't think it's
okay. Well, thank you for working through the numbers. We are doing our best to provide the data and analysis that were given by CSD and not the data, the best available data that we have. So I understand that people want to run through the numbers themselves. I appreciate that. You know, we are trying to, you know, bring you along with the education analysis that we did. That data that you have is in a, you know, very detailed parcel analysis that we did. So I can't be more explicit than that. And the parcels that were zoned for and the 39-acre lot was included. So that's the best I can offer at this level.
I wanted to add one clarity on the date that we're looking at. We kind of have to take a snapshot in time, or else our analysis would never end, right? Because things are happening so rapidly, people are continuing to build. So that's why the date today, our existing numbers, may be backdated a little bit, because we had to take a snapshot in time. We just can't keep updating it every single day.
Please, if you want to ask a question, please be respectful to the rest of the group and come up to the microphone. I would really appreciate that assistance. Ma'am, did you wish to speak? Please pull the microphone down to your room.
Hi, Kathy Ann Atkins. Can you go to the next slide, please? Of the 1,574 projected future demands, can you break that out between what has already been approved that we're kind of stuck with and what is pending or projected?
Which number are you asking about?
The one in the middle, the 1,500.
Okay, the projected additional volume.
So, from my understanding, there have been permits that have been approved, but we can't do anything about that. And then there's projects that are pending, and so I'm not sure how that is split out of the 1,574.
We need to split the numbers in that level of detail.
You said earlier you took into account that which has been approved and that which has been proposed for approval.
Yeah.
So they're all there. You didn't. It's just cumulative, and it would require some separate calculation answer this lady's question.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
If you want to amend our contract, we'll do more math.
Well,
yeah.
We can discuss that internally to see if that's something that we think we need to pursue. Obviously, there would probably be a price cap on it, but thank you. Very good question.
And my point is only because, from what I understand, those that have already been approved, we can't do anything about it. But it would be interesting to know how it plays out between what's been approved and if what's not approved, if we stop it, where are we?
That's
a fair question.
All right, thank you. This is a good question. Sir.
Hi, Ron Fisher. I'd like to mention again that 1760 is probably not accurate. It was probably a little too low. More importantly, the 1574 doesn't get all the buildings and the projects in line for the future. And that, so the 3290 as total demand that we need is probably very low. And so we need to start upping the idea relative to population, businesses, etc. Population, number of people, thousands and thousands that are coming, and the buildings that are going to be coming in the future.
Thank you, sir. I've allotted about 5 more minutes on this part of the presentation. So a couple of questions, and then we'll move to phase 3. If there's any additional phase 2 questions, we'll catch you up at the end, okay? Please
have read again.
I was wondering if you guys actually had a chance to read a document on evaporation that John Hank Merchant?
Which document are you referring to, sir?
Evaporation in our reservoir.
Oh, the evaporation.
If you look, this is for usage. If you look from May, I think it has there, from May 31st to October, there were, usage was, well, CSD made 968 feet of water, means that's usage. And that's for 5 months. Double it, and it's 19. Add another couple of months in there, we're in the 20s. So whatever figures you have up there are dramatically understated. And this is just for current use this year. That's just last year. So I don't know if John even realized that factor. But that is a lot of water usage over 5 months.
You're correct, and that is a seasonal use. So you're comparing and adding up and doubling a seasonal use when all your irrigation systems are on. Use less water in the winter months. And so when we look at the monthly time step, like I was saying, or daily, hourly time step, the numbers turn out different.
There's the problem line. For this to be approved, you're forcing everybody that's sitting here to conserve water beyond what we already conserve. 50%, I believe, is the calculation. I hope everybody brought water before you run out, okay? It's just ridiculous. Your figures, I can spend another 10 minutes, but.
Yeah, we don't have that much time. I will say that when we get to phase 3, there is some discussion about conservation of water as one of the ways to help us deal with the intersect point of supply and demand. And I think it would be appropriate to ask any questions about that at that time. Sir, would you like to step forward, please?
Yeah. Roger Formanek. Roger Formanek, 6913 Scott Oak.
Can I hear you?
Roger Formanek, 6913 Scott Oak. And by way of introduction, I'm a retired state attorney as a litigator for the state of California. I actually work, not as an attorney, but I worked for Kelly Hay for over 14 years. I'm generally familiar with the language, the permitting requirements, although in some areas I don't have direct expertise, but I know what you're talking about. I've worked on hazardous waste, CERCLA cleanup sites, state-appointed experts, so I've found generally a foundation in this area. I carry 2 licenses outside of my bar license, both as an engineering geologist and a geologist in state, and I have a background, at least to pass the exam, in hydrology. So by that, I'm a little befuddled. I'm not exactly certain what the purpose of this study is. In the first phase, we resolve, in the worst case scenario, it's very precarious with the existing approved development in this community. And really, that does not allow for any future proposed development the way we have it today without looking at augmenting water rights or enhancing the water supplies in some fashion. In the second phase of the study, it appears that the master plan provides for a build-out of the community, but the water supply doesn't support it today. So what I think the Community Services District, you kind of reach your end point. You can't give a new hookup to a developer who wants to come in and build a property out today unless they can bring you water. And on top of bringing you water, they have to pay for the capital improvements, water conveyance, water treatment, water supply, and everything else that goes with it. That burden doesn't go on to the people who are in this jurisdiction today.
Thank you. And as a member of the board, I want to say you just very succinctly describe what our challenge is going to be over the next 60 days. As a board responsible for making decisions and recommendations, don't think it's going to be an easy undertaking. Okay, we're going to move on to the presentation on phase three, which we've been hinting at throughout the evening, where these two points intersect, supply and demand, and I'm going to hand it back over to the consultants for that presentation.
Okay. Would you rather that I address one of the questions now related to demand and conservation savings? So a slide that I presented in the command story.
Do you think it's appropriate?
Yes. There's been a lot of questions about these numbers and details, and I do think, I mean, so the goal of this and our being here today is to explain the analysis that we did and have you understand the math and the sources of the data that we used, so that you can put it together with the supply and the demand. You do have, you know, the requirement, and there has been supplemental augmentation funding being paid for every connection. If you listen to the budget discussions, there is a fund for supplemental augmentation supply. There is the requirement that new development does pay, and they have paid. They already paid for your water treatment upgrade. Dan and I can tell you that does not happen. That is a very generous thing, actually, that you already have an investment in your water treatment plant upgrade. So you can disagree.
Wait, please. No, please. Decorum, please. Okay? Come to the mic and speak your displeasure when we call on the next group, please. Please maintain decorum.
I'm just offering an example that in other communities, it is extraordinarily rare for us to see advanced payments on water treatment plant expansion for upgrades that you already have. So that is the reality, and Andrew can explain that more if you want. It's explained on the story map too. That does not mean I'm pro or against. I am completely technically objective. We have a charge to look at your existing community and all the customers that are here now, all the connections. And we also have the charge to look at the whole service area. That's our job. That's just as if you're in the doctor's office and we want you whole health. We want the patient healthy, okay? So that is our job. That's what we're here. We're licensed for public health and safety as engineers. So we're working very hard to give you those answers. We do not want to leave you shortfall at all. That's why what we're going to describe for you and the options that we're giving you are the numbers and the quantities, and we'll talk more down the line about quality. There are a lot of aspects to this. So please, you know, carry along with us. We're on a journey together. These are the scenarios that we put together when we compare the supplies we have, the income, versus the expenses. So, you know, we've done our best to bring you the best available data we have. We also have made some recognition for, you know, the, you know, other work that can be done. So that's your choice. But I can show you in the, I don't know, can we jump to backup slides? I just have to go through this. Well, if you want later, I will show you and I will bring back, or we can bring up the story map, the conservation this community has already had. So when you question these numbers, you have achieved a lot of savings. You have more to go. I will tell you, I can see your indoor gallons per capita per day is at 73 in this community on average. If you looked at state law and 1157, the water budget the state does is based in 2035 on 42. So you have room to move. You're either irrigating in the winter or you've got leaking and old fixtures in your homes. New construction, we'll see, and I happen to live in an infill development in a new home. I run 38 in the winter with four people, four and two teenagers. So you can get lower. There is a lot of room in these numbers. So when you see lower numbers, I think these are actually, from my perspective, reasonable. There, we did not do anything to trick these numbers. We didn't blow them up. We didn't round them down, okay? We're doing our best job to come up with a reasonable baseline for you. But you will see, and it's probably, and it does, probably doesn't completely compute, that if you're doing brand new fixtures in brand new homes, they do use less water indoors. We accounted for that. We conservatively accounted for that in the recycled water, and Dan's going to go over that. We assume that you will actually achieve those water savings. You will have less, more on the order of 43 gallons per capita per day. That's the math that we ran because we're conservative. So it just, there's more to come. Okay, so our overview of the findings, your team takeaways today. When we did our cross comparison of the analysis, you're in your current system and under build out, there are gaps. You're gonna need to make some changes. I already alluded to that earlier, okay? There are a lot of options for you, and we were asked to bring you those options, and we were asked to quantify those options for you. So you can decide how much and what you go after in terms of increasing your supply reliability as a community. I'm going to walk through these, but we're going to talk about recycled water further. We're going to talk about if you had a groundwater source. We're going to talk about if you leverage dementia. These are, if you increase conservation, I just brought up you do have in the state, will look to you to save more water as a community. And that's not me telling you, okay? I happen to be the messenger, but you're shooting the messenger sometimes, it feels like. So the risk of the drought curtailment, you know, where you've assumed 30% cutback, I'm going to show you what that quantity means. You have some choices there, too. We're just here to give you the choices. When we go through the options, we look at them from, we're going to walk through kind of what the gaps are. We're going to show you our analysis and the results in terms of an average year, which means, you know, on the order of, quote unquote, like normal river flows or what we've seen as the average, most recent average, the worst case drought, which for you happens to be 1977, was an extreme drought. And then we go through and we apply some options. You can see, like, well, does it fix it? Is this a solution that makes sense or doesn't? And that's the dialogue that we really, Dan and I, want to have is about, you know, okay, you're short. What are we going to do about it under the next drop? You're okay in the average day scenario. You are in some senses. We're going to get into that. You are not okay in the drop case, okay? And I did planning 13 years ago. It's true. But normally we do these kind of updates every 3 to 5 years. So I will say your cut, it may seem like a big leap in the planning, okay? And we've been over that in past town halls too. But just so you know, it is normal for us to do this on, or, you know, every 3 to 5 years we run your best data and do an analysis. So there's future steps to be done in this engineering assessment. So we are partway down this journey. We are going to discuss, there's still to be discussed, these kind of potential solutions I mentioned. We're seeking a lot of your feedback and your questions. We need to cost out those that you feel are acceptable. There's detailed cost estimates that can be done Our goal is to then complete our documentation, which is all the backup beyond what you see on the story map. We're due to turn in actual a plan, which is a road map that gives you the different options. And then the goal is that the board takes, you know, and gives direction to the staff based on input. The goal is that they adopt the IWMP, because then that gives you leverage to go after capital planning and other grants, other whatever else you go pursue from there. So you do have a link. We posted new information. There's the third story map is live. You're welcome to go there. We show the details and we kind of walk through the simulation steps that we took to, and I'm going to talk through each of these, but basically it talks about the difference of demand scenarios, the hydrology, if you use or don't use the drought plan, you know, what the outcomes are. So we go through and we show a lot of scenarios on there. It's really detailed. We also are presented on the, at the April 17th board meeting too. So the data input, you are governed, as I mentioned, by the water, your income, your supply is governed by your river hydrology and whether or not you can draw water off. You've had some historic droughts. We looked at the historic drought from 76 to 77. You know, you look for the low points, right? That's the worst case. We looked at the most recent drought here, 2013 to 16, and we also looked at the most dry years that we just had, 2020, 2021, and 2022. So the average here, I'm going to talk kind of about your normal, you know, quote, average year case first. And we took the actual hydrology from 2021 to 2022 to benchmark our analysis on. We looked at the median and monthly flows for the 2015 record I just showed you. And we pulled off like what is the most recent 10 years as our, as kind of our quote unquote baseline. But we did, we looked at many perspectives to land on what we think is your kind of your average flow for this time period. It's the closest flow to the mean and median for the consumedness of the rivers. There's more detail on that if you want, but the hydrology is obtained from USGS. So you can go online, you can see this hydrology yourself. It's for the Michigan Bar Gauge Station upriver. This is a detailed, I pointed out the 76 77-78 drought. To zoom in on that, this is like your worst drought. So we test the average year I mentioned. We also test the worst case, right? So this is your worst case. In 77, you have the occurrence in your 115-year record once that the river dropped below 70 CFS and you were not able to pump in any month. That is scary, okay? That's scary. We tested that before. We're testing it again. This is your, you know, the past some months, and your reminder you're able to pump between November and May. And we apply all the rules and we look at monthly time steps. And so the question is, how much water did you store or carry over? How much did you have? How much would you not have to live with? And then without pumping, and then you had a miracle march for any of us that lived in California or near in 78. So this hydrology is what we're representing as the worst case. You know, we have ideas and solutions and thoughts on backup supply. That's why groundwater is coming up, because you do have a more resilient option, potential to discuss, and we're going to get into that in detail. So again, our first scenario, you'll see on the story map scenario number one, and it's can you meet current demand? And what was proposed and provided to us for build-out demands under your permitting right. A reminder has come up already, you are not permitted for the drinking water standards for Clementia. So we have the option to turn off Clementia completely and look at our numbers without accounting for any demand from or supply from Clementia. So that's definitely, you know, the option that we're looking at is you run the numbers. We can run it, and we did run it, and I'll show you how we ran it with your existing. Not using Clementia, both the average year and the drought years. That's what I'm going to show you. Like, what, the gap, what does the picture look like? And I'm going to show it to you graphically. But we have it in a lot of numbers. And then we look at, when we also apply climate change. So we did get river flow analysis and adjusted hydrology, and we didn't even consider the non-climate change case. Okay? We just went straight to a more detailed and adjusted analysis using climate change. So that's there's details about the studies that were provided to us and the analysis that was done, but it does follow the analysis done for your American River. These are downscale data that's provided, and basically it is amplifying or dampening the river flows for us to kind of make this, you know, more extreme case for us. There are, and then in the third scenario, we're going to apply some of the alternatives to see, again, like how much is the gap solved under the worst case scenario, really, again, focused on that scenario where you can't pump, how do you make it? And we look at it, and you'll see just current demand build out, and then we apply alternatives. The takeaways, I'm going to talk kind of about the conclusion, and then I'm going to show you some of the math. But the takeaway is that generally you have enough water, in an average year, and you have enough water to serve your existing connections. Okay? That's today. With Comentia offline, there is barely enough. I mean, there's technically water in the reservoirs, but not in build-out demand. So I will show you that scenario too. Okay? So that's average year, and again, that's not what we as engineers are focused on. We're focused on the drought scenario. So these are what the numbers look like when we graph them out. This is a monthly time step for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. And it basically, this is a you pumping, and we based and worked with Travis and the team on these are real pumping, and then you use, and then you pump, and you use, and then you pump, and you use. And a reminder that you draw off at the same time. So it's a monthly time step that we're running through. So there's a plus minus here. This is the net of what you're putting in the storage. Okay? So income in, income out on monthly time step. How much supply in, how much supply out? It is 60 columns that we run to make this math happen, just so you know. It's super detailed. And we worked very carefully with Ryan's team to make sure that we were only drawing water in and allowed to pump when it was appropriate to do so. This is showing you Clementia offline because it's already come up. We don't have the permits to pump and treat that water. And well, you can pump into Clementia, but you cannot treat and serve that water into the system. We do have the planned connections for those that are established dual plumb connections already. And the golf course is served. There's a change. And we can talk about that more on the raw water side versus recycled. So we're optimizing some recycled water. No drop cutbacks, no augmentation, which you wouldn't apply in when we're running the non-drop case anyway. This is it with build out. So this is the kind of average year where you draw up. Again, you draw down deeper as you would expect as you put up more connections on the system. You were just skimming by. This is what our math is showing. Again, with optimizing, that's with full recycled water for the new connections on the outdoor. We have optimized some of the golf course water. This is no drop cutbacks. Convention left offline. Okay? So this is like the do-nothing case in an everyday scenario, average day. So this is also pointing to the fact that you've been having a supply augmentation fund. That past plan has been pointing to you need augmentation supply to have future development is not wrong. That's right. I mean, that's why you were pursuing a groundwater well following the 2010 plan. So that's kind of the takeaway here. There are options to add more resiliency today. So we could look at, you are right now putting all the recycled water on the golf course. You could look at optimizing that sooner than later. There is future making conservation way of life bonds. I mentioned that before. Sorry, I'm probably talking quieter than I need to. Is that better?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Remind me if I need it. And so we need to account for the future regulations. The state actually just issued their first, well, the third iteration, but it's due to be adopted in July. So we can talk more about everyday conservation, but there's a lot of criticism about our numbers were too high and they're too low anyway. So we didn't take more conservation analysis or water off the table, just so you know, for future conservation laws. Okay, but I already mentioned your indoor DPCD is high. I can see I'm running in numbers for a lot of communities in California. Your numbers are showing high. I feel like you're going to struggle. You're going to need to focus on conservation in your community. So, the scenario two. So that is the average day scenarios under current demands, under build-out demands. So the takeaway conclusion from your risk-case drought is major stress on your system. If you got a 1977 next year, you're going to struggle big time. You're probably going to need a deeper than 30% cut based on our run-of the numbers. Okay? So, and that is because you need to take some more action. You need to consider either more steeper cutbacks, which is what you have on the table right now as of today. You don't have any backup wells. Oops. You don't have any conventional online. That's what the map is telling us. Okay? And you don't certainly don't have enough for build-up. Okay? That is the today. That's where you sit right now. This is your snapshot. Okay? A lot of murmurs. And hopefully I'll show you some numbers, so maybe that'll help us soak in even more. But the do nothing is not an option. Okay? If I was living here, I would not accept do nothing. So, what do we see in current demand? If you have, this is 76 supply, you would be 77 simulated here, you would hurt and be almost no water. That is nothing we want. Nobody in this room wants that. I get chills. I'm getting chills just now talking about it, okay? So, that is, and then this is your miracle 78. You got saved. So you really need to think about what you're going to do if there's additional drought, you know, worst years. We haven't seen a 115-year record. That is risky also to me as an engineer. It makes me very anxious. I do not like that outcome. Dan doesn't like that outcome. Okay? So this is the numbers that we ran in your worst-case scenario. This is the problem. We need some solutions. So that's why we're going to dig in and roll up our sleeves for the rest of the meeting to talk about what options you've got. Okay? Options now. And this is an under, and the build-out is failure. Not an option. So honestly, the question is, how much are you going to collaborate to fix the problem? Do you want a cost share? Or do you want this, you know, saw this on your own? It came up earlier.
Yeah, we got a
rent
report.
So.
Please.
No
psychology. It's open mic. Please share with us an open mic.
So this is the map that we ran, and just so you're clear, we have conventional offline. This is not available. Yes, 77, but kept growing. This is like, I didn't do anything with conventional. You only have 30% cutback. You optimize for the stock of water the best you can. The golf courses in this case, and I have golfed out here with dead fairways. It is not a favorite golf experience, trust me. You keep your greens, everyone knows fairways, right? You keep your greens, but try and keep your tee boxes, the fairways go. And then they come back after the drop. Not great. Nobody really likes that golf experience either. So that, again, we're trying to augment, and again, we have one well turned on. So this is your worst case. This is the do nothing. Just let the connections keep coming. Okay? But we want to show you the map. We have quantities for this. And that's what this is. Our chart, we get a map and we get a monthly analysis of how many acre feet are we short. And this is what we're solving for as engineers. We're trying to solve and conservatively solve for something that does better than that. Significantly better. better for you. On the, so in the other case, you're less than 100 acre feet. So this graph's blank in the current day, but we know you were down like to 100 acre feet. You're a puddle in Chesapeake. Okay, you're a puddle in Chesapeake. Not what you want. Not what Travis wants, for sure. Okay, so this is the build-out. This is the other bookings that we have, okay, that we're tasked with looking at for the full service area. So we have augmentation supply needed. You have shortfall projected. We call it shortfall. That's failure for us. That's task drive. That 100 acre feet, that's better than the estimates I feel we've put out. It's really close. That's not anything I would want to live with, is 100 feet or less. We have, we've talked before, if you came with, there is a Senate Bill 552, says vulnerable systems like yours, for any connection to a system under 3,000 acre feet, 22 systems did fail in the 2015-2014 drought. That's how we ended up with the Macon Conservation and Wave of Life laws in 2018. There are systems that failed. They didn't do prudent planning and prudent investment, or they were too vulnerable to begin with. So that's not where we want to be. They call for solving the vulnerability with another backup supply. So for this community, you know, what we can look to is groundwater. And we're going to talk a lot. We did a thorough literature review and analysis for groundwater, both on how much would you need to make sure that your tasks and your all your indoor water use would be met, along with reserving the 30% supply. We you can consider Clementia. It's a reservoir. You have the permitted water right quantity. You have to invest and pursue the treatment and the additions that come with that. We talked about considering a well. Or you can consider more drastic cuts. Many communities do that. The one in a 115-year chance that they're going to have to out, they're willing to turn off their irrigation systems and live with their indoor water use. That's their choice. It's a cost. It's a cost consideration for them, right? You will have costs, I mean, depending how water-wise your landscape is. I'm going to talk to you more about that, too, because your water use is pretty high. I work with communities like Santa Cruz, like Cambria, like Los Osos. They use a lot less gallons per capita per day. They also have a lot less outdoor demand, but they make it, okay? So,
yeah, I don't know. So, all right, get it out, and then let's get back on task. Thank you.
So I'm not directly comparing to you because I work a lot. I live in this region. I work a lot in this region. I ran the water efficiency program for all 22 utilities in this region from 07 to 09. I was on the radio. I was on TV. I know what drought is like. I know how hard it is to respond. That wasn't that bad of a drought. 2014-15 is worse. So I'm just telling you from a least cost planning perspective, the cheapest water you have is the water that you've already developed. Okay? So I have to put that on the table. We have to talk about that. I know not your favorite option. Okay? But when no one wants surgery, no one wants chemo, no one wants other things too. Right? But you gotta think it through. Gotta put all the options on the table. So under the worst case conditions, we have set the curtailment to 30%. We have withheld, and the state water code calls for emergency condition planning. And you would be an extreme emergency in that 77 hydrology scenario. If you can't pump, that is an extreme emergency. You would be looking at the state calls for planning for greater than 50% cutback. But we as engineers, and we're being conservative, want to look at, and we've held it at 30%. We have capped your demand cutback from the community at 30%. We can see in the numbers that you could do better on the order of 515 acre feet, possible demand that you're putting out in our landscapes from the existing customers that you can, consider, okay? So there are more shifts in recycled water. We talked about treated water from Clementia, groundwater supply. I want to just touch on that point about conserving more water. So if you did get to that 50%, and I mentioned in round numbers, and it does go up and down, and I can bring up the GPCD chart if you want to see later, gallons per capita per day, don't let me talk in acronyms. The average that, that would be on an order of 125 gallons per capita per day for the community. That would be, you know, roughly 50 gallons per capita per day. I can tell you, you know, and I've done the math, and in, you know, new construction, you'd be running in the probably high 30s, low 40s. You have a little, you know, room for some of you. That'd be some conservation you need to do. It's still borderline, like, not total military showers. Okay? I mean, we're running, I told you, family of four, 38 gallons per capita in my house. And I have teenagers, that's not, and I have a hot water on demand system. There's no shut off on the hot water, as much as I try. So, the outdoor use, that would still be then on the order of 75 gallons per capita per day. So, greatly curtailed, but you still have some outdoor use on the table. Okay? So, I'm just mentioning new home constructions on the order of 43 GBT. They're putting in all those new fixtures. That's kind of the math we're running. So just feel free to ask more questions about that if you want. But I just want you to have a sense of when 50% sounds so drastic, right? I mean, I don't want to get that letter or this or whatever. But it is not completely unreasonable. Okay? It's kind of a can you live with it situation. So I just want to give you some perspective and, you know, can you live with it? So could you bring home and live with 125 gallons of milk in the back of your car? That's how much there's water or whatever. That's what would be able to be delivered in a 50% cutback. So it's still quite a bit of water. And then we can talk more about the timing, you know, water. Dual pump connections, they're not going to get away scot-free either. When you reduce your indoor use, they're going to reduce the recycled water availability. They're going to have to trim some of their irrigation, too. It'd be more resilient to have that recycled water because, as we mentioned earlier, it is your wastewater disposal need. So they will have some more resilient landscapes. There will be people in your community that are dual pump pipes, and they will need to be still irrigating stuff. When we work in communities like that, they usually get a sign in their front yard, you know, that says we're on purple pipes. The potential to shift, you know, wild water we mentioned, you know, is there kind of an extreme scenario where you can live with it on the golf course too? So that's also something in the water code 350, they have essential uses. It's fire, it's sanitation, it's domestic, you know, indoor use. Everything else is considered a non-essential use. So I know we consider it essential, but from the state's perspective, from a public health and safety perspective, it's not essential. So that's just the framing that I want to offer. So with that, I'm going to switch gears and let Dan talk about the recycled water. I know there's been a lot of questions about that, but we do want to roll up our sleeves on the analysis and the options.
Okay. I feel like Lisa did all the work for me. I wanted to reiterate one thing. I forgot the gentleman's name, but the one in front here that spoke last. I believe we totally agree with his comment. I want to make one clarity that the direction we've been given, the scope that the consultants have been given, is that we are considering development. Okay, so our direction staff from the CST is how do we make that work? That's not the direction we've been given the other way around. Okay? I just want to make that clear. The direction we've been given is to consider these specific developments. Okay? So I'm going to go into a little more detail on what Lisa was talking about. The utilizing the golf course for using raw water is something that we're considering. It is, the infrastructure is already there, the water right is already there, and it's already being used in that capacity, just not to its full capacity. And so, for example, the last few years, you can see some of the numbers. We can't fully utilize that right now, because as Lisa said, we have to get rid of our recycled water because it's not ready to go to all the homes yet. So we're getting rid of it on golf course. So there will come a point, though, where we can start utilizing it on the houses and start pumping more raw water out of the river directly for the golf courses. That water right won't completely meet, on an average year, completely meet the golf course demand, but it gets pretty close. Okay. There's been some questions about which developments are going to receive recycled water. So Myriad Gardens, which is already dual plumb, there is pipeline to get the water there. The pumping and storage requirements aren't quite there yet. We will detail those out in our capital improvement plan. That'll be in the final master plan. So that's forthcoming on how to complete that. And then the retreats, villages A, B, and C, that's about as far as it'll go for our calculations. So we did a water balance on the recycled water. Lisa did the water balance on the domestic water. We did on the recycled water. And we considered the different scenarios, the same scenarios that Lisa was talking about before. So drought, extreme drought, average year, those numbers. And so full build out, average year, this is about as far as it'll go. Okay, so that's what's been considered. So another question, as coming back to it from before. Do the question, did you want to answer that now or wait?
We'll have to take it after the presentation.
I think it's helpful for the understanding of the river. If they can define the...
No, ma'am, please.
Yeah, raw water is out of, directly out of the river. Is when I say raw water in that context, pumping directly out of the river into the golf course reservoirs, and then from the reservoirs onto the golf course themselves. No treatment, directly out of the river.
You said you were going to use recycled water, and then can we follow the infrastructures in place?
Hold on. We will have an opportunity for your questions after the presentation. Please work with me on this. We're going to run short of time, it's not fair to take... Not fair to take the comments from the floor. We'll get to you. Please, work with me.
So, getting back to one of the questions earlier about where does the recycled water come from?
Defining the term.
Yeah, so recycled water is your wastewater. It comes from these sources, okay? Goes to your treatment plant, is treated to Title 22 requirements, and that is made available to be recycled water to be applied for irrigation, golf courses, homes, etc.
But not indoors.
Not indoors.
Just to be
clear. Irrigation.
Irrigation only.
So, again, big distinction here is this big pie here that makes up almost a quarter is commercial. Okay? So when we're talking about we're going to double the amount of homes, Not just homes that are contributing to our recycled water. Okay, there's another component here it's not in this pie, and that's our infiltration and inflow. Again, we did a recycled water balance and calculated that infiltration and inflow, INI, is the water that seeps into our wastewater pipes, like through the joints, that kind of thing, may seep into like manholes and stuff. That extra water that comes through the wastewater treatment plant, it's about 7.5% on an average year. Okay, that's actually not bad for most communities. I work with a lot of communities, it's substantially higher, so it's not that bad. So we have considered that for existing, and we consider that for future as well. And again, I just wanted to point that out, because that's not in here, in this pie chart specifically, but it is in our water balance. Okay, so this is existing, and the future, or planned build-out, as you can see, this commercial is substantial, okay? Again, these were given to us. This is not, it's not something that we developed, okay? It's based on the developments that were given to us from the CSD, okay? I'll just pause on that for a second. You may not be able to see the colors, because it's kind of small, so I apologize. But the big one here is...
Senior living is considered commercial. I mean, there is some domestic use that might...
Can you step into the mic, please?
I was going to say there are some things that are considered commercial that are domestic use, like a senior living facility, things
like that that you may like think, oh, that's living, that's residential, oh, that's, you know, maybe that parcel is for, but it's technically in your building classification or would not be coming under commercial use.
And then these other two large ones here, those are large estate lots. Those account again for the other ones are kind of split up.
But the pie also grew. It doesn't look like it grew, but it grew.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah,
so
the pie, it's not showing perspective, but it grew.
Correct. The pie in general grew. This is, and again, indoor water only that goes down the toilet, down the drain, plus this infiltration and inflow. That's really what makes up. And then it goes through our water balance because it's not a direct relationship. There's a lot of stuff that happens, evaporation, those kinds of things, when it goes through the treatment plant and storage. Okay, so I'm moving on from recycled water. I'm going to talk a little bit about dementia. I felt like you guys kind of did my job for me earlier because we talked about this already. But I'm going to reiterate. So from a water right standpoint, permit exists. Okay? It's in place. If you have questions, I'll have Ryan talk about that. From a division of drinking water standpoint, so our permit to treat and use the water, so to actually treat it, that part does not exist. It currently does not exist. Okay? That would need to be added to a permit amendment. And there are two avenues for that permit amendment. Okay? Again, these are options. They're not written in stone. They're options that we're presenting the board on how to get there. Okay? It's going to be up to the board to decide. And as we talked about before, one of those is a legislative action, statutory exemption, which would mean you could use that water for domestic purposes and treat it, and you can still use it for body contact. There's generally, at that point, it kind of generally becomes more of an administrative additions to it, a lot more monitoring that's going to be required in the lake. Considering that we have sufficient treatment already in place. Likely we do, but that would be another analysis that would have to be done. Those things are going to be recommended as improvements, as next steps, okay? It's not complete yet. Those things would need to happen still. And as an example, a number of examples of the statutory exemption that's been done in California. The El Dorado Reservoir, all the reservoirs in San Diego County have this exemption, and then there's a few others up there. So is it guaranteed? I can't tell you if it's guaranteed or not, okay? But there's an avenue to get there, okay? The other one is remove bodily contact, essentially. So make it similar to Calero and Chesbro, okay? That's pretty simple. The analysis I talked about as far as the treatment goes to see if we have sufficient treatment, that analysis would still have to be done. But that's the other avenue to get there, to add it to our permit, the permit amendment through the drinking water. Groundwater. So again, the task we've been given is we have a certain build-out condition we need to meet, and then how do we meet that condition? Groundwater is another one. There is the supply augmentation report that was done in 2013. That is on the website. Again, Senate Bill 552. There's more than one reason why a groundwater well would be an option. One is because the rule right now would be an option. There's not a lot of other options available to you as a backup source. I mean, you could connect to a neighboring water system, but I think that's pretty far away. So that's probably not going to work. So the only other option is really a groundwater well to meet that law for 552. Okay. I'm going to go into this in a little more detail on the next slides, but a groundwater well, again, as a backup water supply to meet 552 and to meet some of our drought conditions, we're considering it's a short-term solution, okay? We're not considering it as something you would use every single day, every year. Okay, it's backup. We get into a drought condition or something happens with our system where we need a backup, then we would use it. So that's what we're considering. I'm going to go into a little more detail on why that is. This may come up, and I just wanted to touch on it. We're going to add it into the plan as kind of an extra option, and that's aquifer storage and recovery. It kind of goes back to what I just talked about as far as the short-term supply, not using it all the time, because there's not a lot of groundwater regionally available. Aquifer storage and recovery is where you can pump both ways. So you can take your treated water from your reservoirs, treat it, and put it back into the ground and bank it for yourself. Okay? So we're going to put water in the ground, and we're going to bank it. That's our water. We pull it out later. So that just makes your groundwater supply more resilient. You're not kind of relying on the region. You're putting your own water in, you're taking out. Consider it another reservoir, just like Calero or Chesbro. It's just underground. Okay? There's a lot of extra cost that comes with that. Okay? We'll probably outline some ranges of costs as our plan on what that would take. But if you're already going to put wells in the ground, you may want to consider some extra cost to give you that option of a little more reliability for yourself. Okay? So we did a pretty in-depth literature review of mainly the South American Subbasin Groundwater Sustainability Plan, which is a ginormous document. Our literature review alone, I think is close to 100 pages. That's in review the district, so nobody's seen that yet outside the district. We just wanted to check the box and do our due diligence to make sure that if we're going to say, hey, a well should be an option, is there really water there, how much water, that kind of thing. So we did a lot of research in literature. It's mainly literature review, okay? So I'm going to kind of summarize that and go through. So over here, there's the North American Subbasin, South American Subbasin, the Consumnes, and we are right where this arrow is, right about there. So we're kind of in between two.
American refers to the American River.
Correct. Thank you, American River. So regionally and locally are kind of two key terms I want to talk about where the groundwater is and how available. And again, we are right about there. See where this arrow comes out. We'll do it again. So right about there. In the South American Subbasin Sustainability Plan, it references a lot of other documents and analyses that were done. And one of those is this interconnected surface water study. And what they did, part of what they did is kind of like what we're doing, is they considered kind of the existing conditions when they did it, climate change effects, and projects that would help the sustainability of the groundwater and management actions that would also help the sustainability of the groundwater. Okay, so that's what these are. So this is the projected over the planning period, projected with climate change, projected with those project and management actions, and then all the above, projected with the plan. Project and management actions plus climate change. I know you guys can't see this, so I'll try to describe it because it didn't come out quite right. But based on right where we are at on each one of these, there's kind of a plus and a minus on what's going to happen. They're projecting groundwater is going to drop, right? We're in a really weird spot. We're right on the contour of where groundwater is going to go up and down, where they're not projecting groundwater to change much. Okay? We're right in this line, right where we're at. And this analysis was done multiple times. It wasn't just in this one study. It was done again in a couple other studies. So this is another study that was done, and it's referenced in that sustainability plan. And again, we are right here. So this is a little bit easier to see for you folks, I believe. This brown line here, this brown contour, where my cursor is, that's kind of the no change contour, okay? So multiple of these studies are saying that based on climate change, projected uses, we're in a spot locally where the groundwater is probably not going to change too much. Regionally, it will, okay? And that's why I was saying, like, long term, regionally, there's probably probably wouldn't be a good idea to drill a well and use it every single day. Okay? But from a backup well standpoint, drought, we need water locally, that water should be there. We also work with Slough House, which is the groundwater management agency. They're kind of the ones you buy water from, kind of, if you want to think of it that way. You do have to pay them. It's not a lot of money, but you do have to pay them if you want to use groundwater right now. And they confirmed basically these assumptions and said, yes, there's groundwater available for you if you drill a well. So this is another study, another analysis that was done. To drill down a little bit more detail. This transect here that kind of runs on the north side of the Consumnes River. Just wanted to point this out and where we're at. So we're on the upper or the right-hand side of that, because these next slides are going to say, hey, where's this at? We're on the right-hand side. So this transect I just talked about, how it kind of runs southwest to northeast, is this the same transect here, cross-section. And we're over on the right-hand side here. It only goes about 500 feet deep, but what I wanted to show, and this is a generalization, but there are some impermeable layers locally that you kind of have to get through depending on where the well's at. So it's not just water for days. Okay? You have to potentially drill deeper, you have to find where these layers are, and that's kind of one of the things I wanted to point out. So getting a little bit deeper, that well augmentation study that was done in 2013, where we drilled two test wells, in that study, it's on the website again, they outlined those are not the only two test wells that have been done for the district. There's been quite a few, and these are all the ones that actually have been drilled over time. So it's been done about every 8 to 10 years, a new test well was drilled for the district, going back 4 or 5 different times. So this shows, again, the water is not everywhere. We do have to go at certain depths to get to water. And one of the things that hasn't been done, these are all test wells. Production well has not been drilled yet. And there's generally a pretty big difference between a production well and a test well. With groundwater, it's kind of a crapshoot. Don't know until you actually get the production well in there and you do the development on exactly what you're going to have with quantity and quality. The test wells are a pretty good indicator of what you're going to get, but it definitely changes once you develop a production well. So it's a big difference, okay? But one of the things we normally do for situations like this where we're kind of concerned with exactly what we're going to have is we do these, going to get real technical, aquifer zone testing. So what we do is we guide the driller. When they drill, they stop at varying levels, and they isolate the aquifers, and they test these aquifers individually. And that gives us a really good idea of the quality and the quantity at the different depths. It costs more money, but it's an absolute recommendation for this type of area. I'm doing one right now in Northern California where we're getting ready to bid that out for a community. It's kind of a similar thing. We need to know really what we're going to get. Okay? So that's another recommendation we'll see in the plan. So this is what I was talking about, all the different test holes that have been done over time for the district. So in 2013, there was two test holes that were drilled. The past ones, there were two in 1988, one in 1994, five were drilled in 1995, and one was drilled in 2002. This was all done to the CSD. So if you, yes, most of them they did find water in varying, most of them were shallow. I would encourage you to, it's pretty succinct in that study, the 2013 one that's on the website, and you can see they outline pretty good.
I was there.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Please let him complete the presentation. We'll get your questions answered.
So, I'm sorry, I'm going the wrong way. Okay. I can just give it back. So, okay, I will wrap up. I think this is my last one. Okay, so, again, we did an analysis on this
study and applied it to what we can expect for drilling wells. We're probably about 1 to 2 wells would be required. These are not going to be one well to meet your demands. It would be a well field. We drill multiple ones. 1 to 2 to meet current demands, and probably 3 to 5 wells to meet the build-out demands. That's my last slide, so.
We have a few last slides if you want to see the options, like how the math kind of works out. We apply some of these options. Good details on the demand story, or the scenario story map, sorry, is where we have more details on this. So fundamentally, we need to consider, well, dementia or increased cutback. I mentioned that earlier. Those are, and then the build-out demand. You know, you're more on the scale of meeting wells and or dementia with or without. More wells. This is what the scenario looks like when you have dementia offline. You use the drought plan, but in a larger well field. And if it's a build-out worst case demand, again, with some of the other assumptions in place, you can see that with dementia offline, you're actually, you know, in a situation where you're asking for reserve curtailment, but you have a good amount of reserves, actually much more than dementia in that case. In this case, with dementia, is the scenario with an online but a lesser well field. These are going to cost different amounts, right? So this is what the math looks like. You are basically having a limit of 1,000 acre feet. So you would, with dementia online, you're like dipping into it or maybe. That's kind of what you get out of this scenario when you turn your wells on and you're serving the indoor demand. We list a number of scenarios. We did a lot of runs. We give this, you know, table to kind of show you. This was the average year. This is the where you don't make it. And this is some of the options on the, you know, solutions. And really the, you know, we're looking at solutions that are the most resilient. So those are the green ones on the right, where you consider, you know, at a build-out condition, do you have dementia on or off? What are your well fields, you know, and are you meeting the demands, you know, in terms of the backup with the SB552? So those are the ones kind of, as engineers, we're focused on making it the most resilient. So those are the, you know, the scenarios we kind of were focusing on, but of course, we want to see that. Just want to mention, you know, your today case. Your today case is you are short. Your best way to do that is to hedge and save water now. That saves water in your reservoir. If you have 77 next year, the more that you could save in this year, for example, the more carryover you would have and help yourself next year. So that's, you do participate and have participated, and you did meet your 20x20/20 conservation goals. I've told you by the numbers, I can see that you have some more opportunity on the table. So that's just, you know, if you ran the drought and 77 was next year, you would be calling a lot on conservation and or drought curtailment measures, okay, to really reduce your demand. So I just want to remember that CSD is a member regionally of the Regional Water Authority Be Water Smart program. There's rebates, there's things to take advantage of. If you want to do it now. It's kind of my take. So in summary, you have robust water rights, but you have some action items. Okay? And technically, you're meeting the average day, but again, you're right at the threshold for the demands with build-out. So that's concerning. We need a roadmap on how to get you the demand, the drought demands, the do nothing. If you choose that option, you're in the stage 4 or 5. You're going to have to go deeper than those 30% cuts. That's what we're projecting for you. You can consider vulnerability being solved by adding some groundwater sources. You can revisit your approach to dementia. You can consider, like I said, the deeper cuts for curtailment. You can choose, you know, the on the risk. 2010 plan was 37.5%. But at that time, you hadn't done the 20x20/20 savings. So anyway, that's just on the table. That's your least cost, saving more of the water you already have. and just in general, you know, consider more conservation than making conservation way of life laws are coming. They're going to apply to the CSD. So there's just more opportunity there. So this is hopefully as succinct as we can make it, and you know, we'd really like to take more questions, comments. Would you like to say?
I just want to add one thing for next steps. Our next, basically our big deliverable is going to be late June, early July to the district is the draft plan. So that's our schedule. I just wanted to note that for you.
Thank you. Hold on. I'll call you in a second. Couple of comments. Dan indicated that the direction from the district was to include the build-out. I think a better way to say that is, assuming the build-out, what will our demands be? And how does that match up with our supply? The consultants have not listed in the options that they're looking at because they're making that assumption. There's no discussion of an option about reducing or curtailing development. That certainly is a point that can be discussed as we move forward. I'm not speaking officially, the district board hasn't taken any official position yet, but I want to make that clear. That is something that certainly the community will talk about, and it may very well be presented to the board at some point. Real quickly, raw water either comes out of the river or runs off after we have rain. Treated water is what we put through our water treatment plant. It flows down out of Lake Chesbro into the water treatment plant that Travis and his folks run to provide water to our homes and businesses. Recycled water is what comes out of the wastewater treatment plant, the other side of the highway. After we flush or after we shower, it goes over there, it gets treated and cleaned. We're not allowed to put that back into the Cosumnes River, as was explained earlier. And we talk about repurposed or recycled water. It's the water that we've already used in our homes. We've sent to another treatment plant to clean it up after we've used it. And then it can be used for some purposes. So, sir, please state your name.
My name is Marklin Brennan, and I would like to present one more time to you, Tim, and to the
I'm
board.
Steve.
Sorry?
I'm Steve.
I would like to present the concept of a moratorium on development, because this whole train is being driven by development. Without development. But with the development, this whole thing is being pushed down our throats. We are the ones that have to give up our water. We are the ones that have pools that no one's even talking about. But what do we do with those? We turn them into planters? I'm not sure what the objective here is. Now, we came here and we expected a certain amount of water to be available to us. We want that water available to us in the future. There's only one reason, primarily, that may prevent that. And that is all the development. Over there across the street, the 39 acres over there, and what's being developed right now. And if anybody can't see that, and if you didn't run a scenario as that being taken out of the variables here, then you didn't do your job. I don't care what your direction was. That wasn't a job well done, because that is really the answer, and everybody out here knows it.
Hey, John Merchant, would you step in line so I can get you going here for a couple of speakers here, please? We because I've had dozens of requests to let John speak on behalf, I want to give him some extra time, but... Okay, so I'll get a couple of speakers, John, and then I'm going to ask you to speak up. Please approach the mic, sir. Tell us your name and your comment or question, please.
Jay Hannum. I live here as a resident for 13 years.
Jay Hannum. I live here as a resident for 13 plus years. I have worked for this district and all Northern California municipalities for the last 24 years. I think one of the things that's being missed, even though there are valid comments, is people are saying that they're not taking into account enough things. They're not taking into account that there is more usage of our water than what we're actually seeing. I think that we need to look at the picture even bigger. If you go to the board meetings or if you watch them online, we've also been tasked or projected that we will have $170 to $190 million infrastructure cost repair for wastewater, electricity, fresh water. I think, as a resident, I know this isn't what everybody wants to hear, but I'm okay. My wife and I talked about this the other day. I'm okay writing a check for $80,000 for my portion of $200 million that needs to be spent on an infrastructure change if there's no more development. I have no problem with that. If there's no development. That means that every single house, I estimated 2,500 homes, every single house would have to come up with $80,000 to $100,000 to put into that. And I'd be okay with that. You guys just have to make sure you're okay with it as well.
Here, here.
Okay?
Here, here.
The second thing is that I have family members that live out here, that my wife stated, that cannot come up with that. And in that scenario, we would have to have a development that can pay for this. Okay? Now hold on. I work in the water and wastewater. I agree, number one, there are two things. Even if we stay here as residents, if 77, 78 happens again with already the increases of what we've happened, we're going to be out of luck because we may not have the following year that fails us out. So if we need to have a secondary backup that the state requires that we need as water, I don't think that the best option is throwing to groundwater, even though that's my industry. My industry is to fix and repair wells. If we do that, we are subject to a number of restrictions, even if we were to get a great well, even if we were to do an ASR well. Number one, if we're capped at how much water we can pull out of the river, we have to treat it and then put it in the ground, we may not get it back, and we've already put water into the ground that is a portion of what we're allotted to come out of the river, so it's gone. If we build more storage, like I heard, in the drought years...
Grab the mic out of there. Hold it.
In the drought years, if we were to build a new reservoir, there's no water to fill the reservoir if we're already maxed out. So I think, as many of other communities have done, or have been suggested to do, or have paid for, Woodland, Anatolia, they have to pipeline their water. I think that our viable option, even though it's not in here, and one of the board members was asking the question, do we have to accept this as our program? I don't think we do. We have other options that haven't been put here. If we were to bring a pipeline in from Sac County or from Folsom, from San Juan, you're talking about an 8 to 15 mile pipeline that if we do a 24 inch or whatever, that's, we get into the engineering portion of it. If we were to get into a drought year, if we were to get into a fire in that drought year, which is highly likely, if we have a well that has a generator backup that may be limited by EPA, then we have a pipeline that we could get water from Sac County because we're a rural area, or from San Juan, or from EID, depending on who we decide to partnership with. Okay? There are other things that we need to consider as options that are not on the table today. But one of those things that some of us would have to agree is a development. If people are not willing to put $80,000 to $100,000 out of the pocket.
Thank you, Jay. Perfect. John, I'll bring you up next after this gentleman, please.
He kind of took everything that I was thinking about.
Right under the microphone, please.
I'm sorry. I've been here for 35 years. I've been here for 35 years. I've watched this place grow. I've raised all my kids here and now my grandkids. This is a wonderful community. The problem I see is rooftops. And I'm not sure, I was late getting to the meeting, so I'm not sure who you people represent. But they don't represent me. I'm upset that we're worrying about money, about water, to take care of something we don't have. We don't have enough to cover all that stuff. You're asking us to cut back on our water reserves that we've been here for, in my case, 35 years, so I can support new development. It just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me. And I'm really not happy about it. I'm not happy about it. I'm a longtime resident and a strong time supporter of the community. And for all of this to come out in front of me, it just really upsets me. And I just have to speak that out.
Thank you for your comments.
Before decisions are made and have different people collaborating and also include our decaying infrastructure or aging infrastructure, our lack of reserves. The committee should include you as a board member and maybe John behind me as that wonderful gentleman that works in the water industry. I think that would be a great contributor. Other people in the community that are not biased in any other way, and to come up with different solutions. Because it's not just the water when you look at our lack of reserves and our aging infrastructure. So I think solutions for everything would be to be proposed. And just so I wish you would consider having a committee rather than just the board making these decisions, I think you would have more trust from the community, which needs to be rebuilt after the grand jury decision. So, please consider this.
Thank you for your comments.
And now we're going to maybe come and cover your finances. Just, you know, whether it's borrowing money or bonds or whatever, that needs to be on the table too. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, please share your name with us.
Thank you, Jeff Kohlhart. Boy, this is a complicated thing, and there's a lot of smart people here, so thank you all. But we're all here for one thing, and that's to protect our way of life here at Rancho Marietta. You know, and listening to what's been going on, this is going to be sort of a repetition of what other people have said, but it's going to come down basically, I think, to three things. One is conservation. One, we're going to have to go to war over the master plan build-out, and then we're going to have to go to war with the developers.
Yes.
Thank you for your comments. Again, I've allotted some additional time to Mr. Merchant because of the numerous requests that I received, basically proxy to have him speak on behalf of several dozen people. John?
Okay, you can hear me, correct?
Yes, sir.
Everything in my notes that I wanted to say, first of all, understand from Janice's standpoint and mine, we're doing this cold. This is the first time we've seen this stuff, and back when we set this thing up, we arranged we were going to have this stuff 10 days in advance. This is the third time in a row we haven't seen this stuff until the night it was presented. So I'm winging this, and to kind of make sure I got everything in here, SOLOS has a website, SOLOSRN.org, and on there, if you go into it, see if you can crash it, there are a list of three things, and one is the notes that I have in front of me here, and I'm going to forego some of them, but it's all important to me, and at some point you might want to take a look at it. The third item on there is just for fun. I went in and I mapped off the State Water Resources Control Board the status of water rights on the river, and it looks like something that a heart surgeon designed, and every right and every stream and every river is completely allocated. There are no rights on this river. Let's There's some water under the bridge that I've let go of about how we got to where we are and how we did this project and why we, no offense to Lisa, why we selected the same consultant four consecutive times. The second time that's happening, the first time I suggested we change auditors, and we know how that turned out. Assumption number one in a plan that at this point is a series of assumptions is that the Cosumnes is a reliable, sustainable source of water supply for 9,500 people. And we have historical data on the river, like Lisa mentioned, that goes back 100 years, and in previous decades and previous generations, it's been easy to see over the life of the gauge at Michigan Bar that we had three terrible years in the 70s, and we've had subsequent droughts, which subsequently have gotten longer. The last drought was a four-year drought. We've had pretty sustained drought, and we've tiptoed around it because in the last drought, the water was on the other side of the watershed, and we didn't get hit as bad as a lot of other people. But what's important about that, and I've sent this to the board, and I've sent five really detailed letters to the board and never really gotten a formal response on anything that I have sent. But we have studies now and policies issued by the State Water Resources Control Board over the last 5 years. And more importantly than that, a seven-year, multi-million dollar study that's called the American River Basin Study that analyzed our whole watershed from the Russian River to the bottom of it, which is us on the Cosumnes. And the telling results of that advise caution as we go forward, because what they and what the Water Board now tells us is more when we're going to get interruptions in the river and not if. They also describe what's called a new normal at the State Resources Water Control Board, and they are telling people to disregard history as the predominant source of evaluation. So what we're assuming here is things on that river are going to get worse and not better. When you handicap the Cosumnes, there's a couple of things that I really want you to understand. Number one, our watershed is at 7,500 to 7,700 feet in elevation. When you're standing in your skis at the top of Kirkwood, you're at 10,000 feet. Okay, so you're 3,000 feet down from that. It sits on a granite shelf. It has terrific, terrible damage to its canopy from the Caldor fire. And what does that mean? It means that the sun is now hitting the granite, the water is melting faster, and what the basin study and the Water Board now say is that spring runoff is now going to become winter runoff. And what they say, number one, and we got it on New Year's Eve a couple of years ago, you're going to get floods because all this water is coming down in advance. And then what happens to us is more importantly is when we stop getting water in March, in April, and May. When we're not topping off doing this direct diversion that they're talking about, okay, you're starting a water year with less than 100% supply in your reservoirs. If you start one like that and you hit a drought on the tail end of it, you have a catastrophe that is equal to what Lisa described in 77, 78, and 79. Our water rights, little known fact, were actually curtailed in May of 2022. We got a letter, not a letter, we got an email from the Water Board that said, stop pumping. Yeah, Rancho Murrieta, and it wasn't just to us, it was up and down the watershed. We know you have a water right. Stop pumping, because we're telling you to stop, because we have problems downriver. And they said to expect more of the same, and they have been warning about that ever since. So when we do the assumption of risk on this water plan, I think it's important, and what's made me uncomfortable is Lisa has used climate change and we're using formulas, and I'm not an engineer. I come from a family of engineers. My brother drove a railroad train. Okay? So I look at this as someone who knows the river, someone who's been walking it and watching it for 40 years. That was complemented through this process in the relationship that I had for almost 30 years with John Sullivan. John knew the river. I knew the river. And we understood what the river does. And one of the things I want to pick up on is the suggestion that, let me get the number so I've got it right. Permit 16412 is the permit that they found that has 400 acre feet of water in it. That is a summer diversion permit that Mr. Granley's got in 1950. And he got it with a 40-acre storage so he could irrigate only with that right. And it was for the summertime. And I think you'll understand that the flow and the health of the river in 1950 was a whole lot better than it is now. So what happens if you go and you rely on that permit, which is below the Granley's Dam, okay, to take raw water out of the river and put it on the golf courses so you can take recycled water from across the street at CSD and run it through piping and put it through landscaping. Now, in July of 2021, John Sullivan called me when I was still on the board of directors. And he said, I need some help from you. I need you to get me some water out of Clementia and run it down through the ditch and run it down past the equestrian center, down to the alfalfa fields below it, because the ditch is dry and we can't get any water. The river was running at 0 cubic feet a second. I have pictures of this that I put on the internet not too long ago on Facebook. There's a giant hole in the bottom where the water's supposed to go through the bottom of the dam. The dam was down, there was no water over the top of it, the water was backing up, there wasn't enough water to even move forward. That's the same water they're going to take slightly down the river, they're going to pump it in the summertime, and they're going to use it to water two golf courses. Now, that may look good on a permit, but it doesn't look good in reality. That water is not there. If you trace the flows on the river in August and September, and particularly historically, you don't have flows to support that. And the minute it runs dry, then what do? You have water in those lakes that, across the street that you've got to get rid of before it rains. So keep that in mind as they use that as one of the alternatives. That was assumption number two, where I said that that permit would lead us to the promised land, but it won't. I want to talk about Lake Clementia. We've brushed over who's calling the ruling license on that reservoir, and its ability to use for potable consumption. And what I'm beginning to understand is that to use it for potable consumption, it's not a water quality problem, it's a division of water rights problem. You're going to need to transfer recreational use to a municipal use. And I have been told in the meetings that I went to, number one, that's very expensive. Number two, it's very time consuming. And number three, when you have protests to that change in the water right, it multiplies both time and money exponentially. And it can take years to get that permit. The problem we have, and the reason we have 3,900 acre feet of diversion off that river, stems back to protests in 1979 when we built the Calero Reservoir. and the Pension Trust Fund and the Bank of America went to the board and said, hey, we want to put water in Lake Clementia. And what was understood by the people downriver and the protesters was that was going to increase the storage in the holes in the ground from 3,900 acre feet to 4,900 acre feet. And they said, wait a minute, people down the road, like Mr. Seniority, growing hops, and the Schneiders on the ranch, everybody protested saying, you're going to increase consumptive use, you're going to take more water off the river. What the water board said was, okay, you can put water in that lake, but you still have 3,900 acre feet. So to keep it simple, and it's described in the permit itself, put the water in Clementia, put the water in Chesboro, put the water in Calero, but it's 3,900 acre feet. And why is that important? Well, tomorrow is May 31st. Hooray, hooray, it's the end of May. Okay? And the pumping season ends today. That's it. We're done. So from May 31st until November 1st, not one drop of diverted water comes out of that river and goes in those reservoirs. So over that five-month period, the evaporation study that they refer to that I sent to the board, I calculated the difference in the water from May to November, and then I got from Travis on his monthly reports. All of this comes off the reports that were used in the monthly meetings at the board of directors. And what it showed me was that between what they pumped through the water plant and what they carried as inventory at the start and the end of that summer non-diversion season, we lost 650, give or take, acre feet of water. Now, when you use 3,900, I mentioned before, that's a gross number. You're going down from 3,900 acre feet to a net number, and that net number is resulting from what you lose to seepage and evaporation and what you lose in what we call dead storage. Dead storage is water below the level at which it can be pumped effectively and efficiently out of the reservoir. Now, Lisa, in April, mentioned at her meeting, well, you know, at Folsom, they took those pumps out in the middle and they were pumping all that water and everything out. And that is true. They were doing that. Okay? And they were pumping water that they couldn't get through the spillways and over the dam. Well, they were still pumping water 20 and 30 and 40 feet down. Okay, when you get to the bottom of Calero, you're pumping water in 4 feet. Okay, so I don't know what you're going to pump out of there and what the quality of it is going to be. And speaking of quality, we have not done any evaluation. We know from reports Lisa has done previously that there were statements in there based on, I believe it was in the water supply assessment, that yeah, you have enough water, but you will drain Calero. So if you drain Calero on the way down, okay, what does that do when you get warmer water, you get algae, all those things that impact us? So what you're getting out of there is not going to be what you got in there now. The problem with Clementia...
John, can you wrap up 2 minutes, please, so I can call the other speakers. Thank you.
The problem with Lake Clementia, in addition to being a permit problem, is a drainage problem. Okay? Drainage is local runoff. Drainage comes off an 1,100-acre watershed that starts at the Sacramento Conservancy and works its way down past the water plant and into Lake Clementia. The water comes off the top on the east side of the lake, goes into Lake Jean at times and comes down, or comes down altogether. Okay? That's local runoff. The plan calls for that to be a solid row of houses all up that side of Clementia. Okay, what that means, according to our 1988 drainage plan and the update we did in the 90s, is that that drainage has to be taken away. That drainage cannot reach our reservoirs. So we no longer have drainage. Drainage almost exclusively fills Lake Clementia. Remember that because it's important. Because if you turn drainage into urban stormwater, number one, you have to find a place to put it that's not in the floodplain, and you have to then make sure that if you're going to fill the lake up, where are you going to go get the water? You're going back in the river. The minute you go back in the river, I will tell you, up and down river, all hell is going to break loose here. So you wonder, well, who would probably protest? Well, first of all, let's start with the guys who protested in 1979. The Ogee Hardinell guys are below us, okay? The ranchers are below us. The people across the street on the groundwater authority over here are already losing water in their wells. So Stan Van Vleck has written a letter to the district, and he intends to protest because he's at the base of that drainage. His house and his property and his ranch are down below where this water runs. So if you get multiple protests, and who knows, you might get one from me. Okay, so if you get those, how long do you think it's going to take, and do you think you can survive them? So is Clementia a viable option? You can talk about the permit and resolve that, but until you take care of the drainage problem, you still have a major problem to deal with.
Thank you, John.
Okay.
And as a nice segue, John just mentioned Mr. Van Vleck. Is Greg O'Brien in the room? Greg O'Brien?
Yes, I am.
Mr. O'Brien is actually going to read Mr. Van Vleck's letter into the record for us. Mr. Van Vleck couldn't be here this evening, and so he's asked to have this letter read into the record, please.
Use the mic, please.
Sure. Regarding Rancho Marietta North expansion, opposition.
Thank you.
Dear RMCSD board members, I'm writing to express strong opposition to the significant expansion proposed for Rancho Marietta by Carol Ward Anderson and other investors. We oppose this effort because of the lack of water for the homes in the project. We have owned property directly across from Consumers River for some of the proposed development, including Village D, which is directly across the river from our ranch for almost 100 years. It is an important part of our ranch that is where my house is located and our family grave sites, including my grandparents and grandparents. Like many of the farms and ranches in this area that relies on the consumers to irrigate land on our ranch, which we have properly permitted with the State Water Resources Control Board. Adding the additional development without sufficient water in the Consumers River harms our ability to irrigate our lands, which we use to feed and water our cattle during spring, summer, and fall months. We would ask before this development moves forward in any way that comprehensive studies be completed and evaluated to fully understand how it will impact water availability and use inside and outside of Rancho Marietta for all those in the Consumers watershed that rely on this important limited resource. Our concerns include, but are not limited to, the following. One, all studies and the State Water Resources Control Board warn of future interruptions on the river. Marietta cannot store water, enough water to guarantee a satisfactory margin of safety. Two, development of Clementia will pose huge shifts in the drainage in the Clementia watershed. Our ranch is at the base of that watershed, and this is a huge concern to us. Three, the plan can lead to Rancho Marietta placing additional pressure on the river as it draws additional raw water. The river is already fragile and likely oversubscribed. Putting in more homes and infrastructure without a better understanding of its impacts on water availability puts the greater community at risk. Our family has worked hard to be good neighbors to the Rancho Marietta community. We are friends with many of the longtime families that have lived in the Rancho Marietta Slough House community that surrounds Rancho Marietta. This includes Carol Anderson Ward and her family. They are good people. I respect and appreciate what Carol and her family have done for the Rancho Marietta Slough House area. Unfortunately, this proposed development is not good for the community. If it moves forward, we will have no choice but to protest this effort to incorporate unappropriated water into the 2024 water plan. I respectfully ask you vote against any measure that would allow this new proposal. proposed use. Thank you again for this for consideration. Sincerely, Sam Van Vliet.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. I'm going to call on Jay Solomon and then Janice Decker. Before Mr. Solomon speaks, I want to point something out. That is that CSD has no hand in approving development. That is done by the Sacramento County Board of Supervisors. And that's the plans that have been approved to date. That's who it's been approved by. We're here to talk about how do we provide water to the current and future residents. Mr. Solomon, if you'd approach the microphone, please. Mr. Solomon is one who had a number of requests to speak on your behalf, and then I'm going to ask Janice Eckhart to follow Mr. Solomon, please. You can pull it out of the stand. Here. Thank you, Andrew. Just slides out. So this is Myrna Solomon, right?
Yeah.
Good evening, ma'am.
I'm Jay Solomon. He's Myrna Solomon. Okay. So one of the options proposed for supplementing our water supply is groundwater wells. You can't have wells without groundwater. That's a given. Our groundwater situation is precarious at best. Our aquifer is small and unsuitable for groundwater storage. And I thought that Greg was going to read Greg Wheeler's letter, the geologist. So I don't know what happened with that. But anyway, he made it very clear that the area around here is not good for wells. The California state law passed in 2014 created a Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, to protect groundwater from depletion and overuse. This law essentially puts groundwater control and management in the hands of the groundwater sustainability agencies. There are 7 agencies locally, and we are a part of the Consumers Groundwater Authority, which is required to submit a long-term 20-year plan to create a strategy to reverse the depletion of groundwater and to ensure long-term sustainability. The plan is called the Groundwater Sustainability Plan for the Consumers Basin. Both reports are available online under SGMA 2014 and Consumers Basin Groundwater Sustainability Plan. It is important to understand and recognize the correlation between groundwater and wells and how they affect our options for our water supply. You can't have a well without groundwater and a receptive aquifer.
Hi, this is John. I'm Jay. I've been in Rancho Marietta for 35 years. I retired from the city of Sacramento Department of Utilities.
Got a hold of my microphone.
Like an ice cream cone.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. I've lived in Rancho Marietta for 35 years. I retired from the city of Sacramento Department of Utilities in 2005 as a water treatment plant operator. 18 of my 20 years, I was a team member on the well crew. My job required chemical dosing and testing, well efficiencies and drawdowns, among other tasks pertaining to the wells. Since the early 90s, there have been an effort to find a suitable site for augmentation wells. Are there any wells on the district property? It's not. No. Only one working well that we know is on the equestrian set of grounds. If there are any additional operating wells, we are unaware of their existence. Over time, test wells have been drilled throughout Rancho Marietta. Cantova Way, private property, is not viable. A site on Anderson property, not on a district property, that was tested with unknown results. All other tested areas were not viable to produce potable water. District property is the preferred choice for fewer complications and costs that contain than containing without than contracting with outside property owners. The district has been unsuccessful in identifying groundwater conditions suitable for drilling wells. The focus on wells at this point is to add water, recharging, not to draw water. In my experience, wells can present unforeseen problems as sanding, barnacles inside casings, perforations that plug up, just to name a few. Attempts to acquire permits for drilling wells and wells under current drought conditions will be daunting and very expensive. Drilling a well in California can cost several $1 million. Multiple permits are required, and you must comply with new procedures for implementing new requirements. Even then, permits may not be approved, and long wait times are to be expected. My question that I have is, in the process of retrieving data for the study, did you research the feasibility of wells in our specific district?
Yeah, it's been presented. It was considered. Yes, they discussed the history during their presentation earlier.
Okay, I was back there. I couldn't get up here to see it. Is the study going to tell us what the water level is, water recovery, GPM, which is gallons per minute, for producing wells plus water quality?
And I think Dan addressed that earlier in terms of you drill test wells to see if there's water there, but you really need a production well before you can determine what it's going to produce. Is that correct, Dan? Yeah, okay.
Well, I don't know. How many acre feet for how long?
So the answer to your question is no. Those calculations have not been made today.
So we don't even know what kind of water we have in the ground. What's the water quality? I mean, you're telling us that there's test wells there and we have a water level somewhere, but what's the water quality?
Yeah, I don't think those assessments have been made yet, Mr. Saltzman.
So some of that hasn't been done. So the test wells that were completed in 2013, the most recent, they did do actual flow tests on those. Best data we have, which is better than nothing, not as good as a full production well. They did do water quality testing. Take that with a little bit of a grain of salt because, again, you don't get real good data until you do a production well. The one thing to note on that, they did two wells. One had slightly elevated levels of arsenic. The other one had low levels of arsenic. Generally speaking, not always, that tends to clear up when you have a production well and you develop the aquifer. So not always, but generally it does. We, in our capital improvement plan, in the study, in the actual document, we do present options for that, for blending and some treatment. So we have considered that, okay? At the minimum level, the best case scenario would be a production well would show that would clear up.
Can you produce the results of that so we can all see it?
Yes, it's
on the website.
It's on the
website?
Yes, it's on the store.
Okay. I kind of want to bring up Comentia, if you don't mind.
We need to wrap up. I've got a couple more speakers.
Okay. I have an issue with that. You're asking us to take away one of our recreations. You're asking us to cut back a hell of a lot. But yet, the developers, you're not asking anything out of them. You're not asking them to cut back. Why not ask them to cut back some permits? Ask the county to say, hey, these people, they just don't have the water out there unless they do some crazy things, jump through hoops. But you're not asking the developer of the county to say, hey, don't give all these permits out.
So I just thank you, Mr. Solomon. I appreciate your comments. The microphone to Jan, please. The last comments, I'm trying to be a very neutral party here because I really am. They're not telling us to do anything. They're telling us, hey, you got a problem. Here's some ways you might choose to solve that problem. And And we're going to have to, as a community, have further discussion about whether or not those possible solutions work for us. And in terms of the development, again, it's not up to these folks to tell anybody, don't let Rancho Marietta develop anymore. It's not really up to the CSD, it's up to the citizens, if they wish to pursue that, to talk to the County Board of Supervisors. With that, I'm going to call on Janice Eckhart, please.
So wouldn't their report go to the county? No?
I'd like to just state something in reference to that. The CSD supplies the county with a water supply assessment and whether or not there is water available for the development. So no, they don't say whether or not you could build or not, but they say whether or not there's water available. Okay, in 2006, I was very bold and I came out and I stated that the CSD was manipulating the data in their studies, that there was insufficient water for the development, and my concerns were dismissed, and I was discredited. Okay, I want you to know how I figured this out, and I'm going to prove to you that what I said was true then and is true now. First of all, I pulled up all the studies that CSD has done, and I read every one, and if you have ever read a 2-inch thick engineering study, not fun. But I got through all these ones and all the different studies, and I found this pattern that the first main one was that we could handle 1,800 dwelling units. That's the number. A dwelling unit is the average water usage for the average home. So 1,800 dwelling units are approximate homes. The next study was 2,400 dwelling units. The next one was 3,400 dwelling units. And then there was a study the developers put together that was 3,728. In fact, each of these excludes some of the commercial, but about 800 more homes. And I'm going, how is this even possible? This is in a matter of months. Well, it turned out it was because there was litigation going on. And so to resolve the litigation, they changed the assumptions in the study, and they kicked the can down the road. Okay, but I want you to look at some of these assumptions. I figured this out because Ken Giberson, who was the water engineer in 1990, was brilliant. And he was an ethical man. And he wrote why he did certain things, and also why he didn't do certain things. Okay, one of the things that he talked about that he did do is he changed the way you analyze water usage. Industry-wide, they do what's called an EDU factor, equivalent dwelling unit, the water usage of the average household. And they use the EDU because it does include some commercial and industrial. Okay. Normal usage is, let's say that the average home uses 750 gallons per day per equivalent dwelling unit, okay? And what you do is you take your net water, you divide that 750 gallons per day per EDU into that available water, and that tells you how many homes that the district can support. And that's a very simplified version of it, but that's the idea. But what CSC has done since 1990, they're using a hybrid EDU factor. They assume that every developer home will use less water than what we do. And they decide that based on the lots. So they have the developer come, okay, these are the lots, this is what I'm going to put in. And then they decide how much water each one will use. Well, let's say if you live in the retreat, you're going to use 0.60% of an EDU. Or you live in Riverview, you live, let's say you're 80% of an EDU. Or Marietta Gardens, you're at 60% of an EDU. I don't know if you see the significance of this, but let's say you don't have enough water, all you have to do is change those numbers. So it's ripe for fraud. And Ken Giberson explained that this was not the normal procedure. It's a hybrid. Okay, one of the other things that he talked about were the assumptions that were unachievable, that he felt placed the community at risk of running out of water. I want you to know that the current study uses every single one of the assumptions that he says is dangerous. Let me give you examples of these. First one is the flashboard capacity. If you look at her study, if you go to the story maps, you'll see that the lakes are assumed to be at their flashboard capacity. Okay, those are temporary bores that are placed at the spillway of the reservoirs, and it allows the CSD to increase the storage capacity of the reservoirs. It's a wonderful way of adding more water. Nothing wrong with that.
The problem is we can't leave those in during the rainy months because you could get runoff that would cause some damage to the reservoir and the reservoir foot failure. So they require, the state requires that we cannot put those splashboards in until April 16th. And we can only pump till May 31st. So that means we only have 6 weeks out of the entire year that we can pump the splashboard capacity of the reservoirs. Now here's where the problem comes in. If we have a dry spring, we can't pump that capacity. If our pumps go out, we can't pump it. If we have a really wet winter, lots and lots of rain, but it's warm and we don't have much snowpack, which feeds our spring runoff, we don't have that capacity. If we have a fire above Rancho Marietta and the water's contaminated, we don't have it. So here's when you rely on that capacity for future development. You're planning that you're going to have that water. You build those houses, and then it isn't there. You can see the problem it creates. So this study that Lisa has done relies on that flashboard capacity. Okay, let's look at some of the other things. He said that in 1990, the developers wanted him to reduce the loss rates in his study. Now, loss rates are through evaporation and seepage and through leaks and breaks. Okay, so let's look at the evaporation and seepage. Ken Giverson used a 25% evaporation seepage rate, and he said that that figure was, he came up with that by using the Davis site, which tests evaporation seepage. They have different test sites throughout the Sacramento region, and they test how the water in these test sites evaporates and seep, and then it tells the reservoir districts how they figure how much they lose. Okay, so he specifically stated the reason they use the Davis site is because the Department of Water Resources says that Davis has the most similar soil conditions to what we do. And he also stated in there, which I thought was really interesting, the developers wanted him to use a different test site. And he said he didn't, first of all, because he was going to use the one the Department of Water Resources said he should use. But he also didn't want to use another test site because it would be a lower number, but it would be inaccurate. I want to point out that this study uses the Folsom test site. Again, Department of Water Resources says use the Davis site, okay? That difference in from the 2010 study and the 1990 study was 25% for Ken Giverson. For Lisa, it's 20%. If you have less evaporation of seepage, that shows that you have more water for the developer homes. Okay, so let's look at the other losses through breaks and leaks. I don't know if you went to the last CSD meeting, but we've got some real problems with our infrastructure. We have the average pipe has a 50-year life expectancy. There are a lot of pipes in Rancho Branda that are 50 years old. And so we're having a lot of breaks. Well, in 1990, when Ken Giverson did this study, he said, I'm going to use a 10% leak break number because the system's relatively new and it's not prone to leakage and breaks. Okay? By 2006, now 16 years later, 8% was the number that's used. Now, it's older pipes, but we're going to lower that number, okay? In the 2010 study, 10%. So now, again, we've got some old pipes here, but we're still using that low number because that was used in 1990. Okay, let me just go through a couple other things here. Excuse me.
Janet, about 2 minutes to wrap up, if you need, please.
Okay. All right. Okay, on the drought conservation rate, if you pull up that story map, I want you to look at it really closely. It says that drought conservation rate of 30%, and has the words behind it, could be lower. It should be lower. When planning for future development, you always plan on a 15 to 20% rate. When responding to a drought, you may be 50, 100% that you cut.
But for planning purposes, you don't plan to put communities in a position where they take financial loss. But I also want to state that she says that the water code 10632 requires a 50% cutback. So it makes it look like CSD is really doing a great job. We're only going to cut 30%. We have to cut 50. I mean, how great is that? Well, the thing is, that water code that she's referencing does not apply to planning for future development. That code is there in response to a natural drought. Districts have to have a plan in place to cut water up to 50% in response to a drought. Okay, I want to two more points and then I'm done. Trigger point. When the drought conservation in the study, the trigger point was missing from the 2010 study. Trigger point is, when do you assume that the water gets cut back? Okay? If it's missing from the study, well, I'm going to tell you why I think it's missing. It's because she assumes that it starts way before we would even know we have a drought in a real life situation. So I think they're playing games there. The other thing, the capacity of the system was missing out of Lisa's 2010 study. Capacity of the system is how many homes can a water study, I mean, can a water supply support safely? I mean, she left, you know, we hired her to figure out how many homes could this community, can our water supply support? And that only number that we're really hired her for is missing from the report. I'll tell you why I think it's missing. We've already exceeded the capacity of this system, and you saw it there. It's worse than that because they're playing with the numbers. There's a we can point fingers at everybody. To the past, the PTF, to the boards, to the developers, to everything. There's all kinds of finger pointing we can do. The bottom line is we're in a real heck of a mess. It's time for us to stop pointing fingers. I'm asking each and every one of you to write letters, call, talk to the board of directors. Tell them to have Lisa clean up her study. Get the data corrected so we know where we truly are. How bad is this picture? It's bad, but it's worse than what's being said. And then let's all jointly get together, work with the developers, work with CSD. Let's all figure out a way to get around this, to figure out a solution out of this problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hi, Carol.
Okay, I'm Carol Anderson Ward. I'm your main developer for Rancho North. I built the hotel, the shopping center. I've worked on the equestrian center for over 40 years. I've been in the community since 78. I'm not your enemy here. You know, we bought the development lots we bought. They were for 1,200 homes. We went down to 600 and some. And we've looked very carefully at this property on the other side of the lake, and it probably doesn't need to be built on. It probably needs to have and we need the drainage in the Comitia, and those are the kind of things that we're looking at that we can help with. But we don't want to be in a fight with this community. You are my neighbors. I love this community. This is where I grew up and where I raised my kids and my horses. So, let's work together, let's solve some of these problems. We just did a well on my property down by the river on the ag ground. You know, we are trying to find solutions, and we're cutting the numbers to do it. We're looking at sensitive areas. We're bringing in people that want to make this a wonderful place to live, bring up our property values. We want to save the country club and the golf courses, and that's not an easy ask right now, but you know, we're going to be stepping in here and doing a lot of things here too that I think is going to bring us all a lot more success. And we're trying. We're really trying to help this community. We're not trying to cause a bigger problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Would you hand the microphone to Maria who's coming up next? Thank you.
Good evening.
Maria Condo. I don't know about you, but are you tired? It's been a long day. So I'm going to cut to the chase. My focus is what we don't have and what we do have. And I am strongly urging.
Yeah, hold the right part of your mouth.
I am strongly urging. We've heard here tonight, I've heard at other meetings. This study is failing one. There is no way, and I do disagree with you respectfully, that we can make it better. There is a lack of trust, there's a lack of transparency. So I urge the board to do their duty as elected officials, and reject the study, move forward without it. And then I agree, let's come together. Carol, I agree with you. Let's come together with Harvard and Janice and start again. But we cannot do it based on this study again, which is very flawed. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. I'm going to take one or two more, and then I believe that Linda Butler also wanted to address as we close.
I know a lot of people here already probably know this, but again, one major point that is not in this analysis is a reserve for a catastrophic event, such as a wildfire. As you all know, as homeowners, you're having problems getting insurance or having your insurance renewed, but at a minimum, and again, this goes back to some of the flawed, wrong numbers, misinterpretations, solutions that are not really viable. But again, keep in mind, we are in a wildfire event, and it could happen. And how are we going to refill our water? How is our drinking supply? What will it cost to bring in the trucks? And that, again, I think we need to footnote some of this stuff.
Thank you. You want to hear me then? Linda, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up, please. I'll give you a chance. You want to respond to that comment?
What are we doing?
Go ahead.
Thank you, all of you. I'm sorry that we lost a few people in the process.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for coming, and thank you for telling your neighbors about this meeting. This is not the end. There will be more. There'll be more meetings. We're going to ask more of you. And I handed out a million flyers, and there will be more opportunities to hand out more flyers. I just really wanted to acknowledge the fact that you came and that you're concerned, and we appreciate that.
Thank you. Ms. Mattos has sat here very patiently and listen to a lot of critical comments and positive comments, and I want to give her one last opportunity to speak on behalf of the work that she and the other consultants have done. Lisa?
Thank you. It's actually Lisa Meadows. And I have practiced engineering for a long time. I appreciate all the comments tonight, some of which were directed at me personally. I want you to know that we are here to be your technically objective voice. I did my best job. I have signed NDAs to work on court cases for the Supreme Court. I work in many states. I live here locally. I took this on. We are over budget on our part of this project. I have donated more than 100 hours of my time. Okay? I am here for you. We are doing our best math, our best analysis that we can. So it is very challenging for me.
Back of the room, would you please step out if you want to have a private conversation? Some respect for the speaker, please. Thank you.
I appreciate if you want to label things flawed. I do not view them as flawed. And I'm not standing here trying to fraudulently try to put numbers together for you. Neither is Dan or any of his team. We are all engineers and professionals. So I just want you to leave with the perspective that you're telling me as a professional engineer, the same as you walked into your doctor's office as an MD, you are wrong. I don't agree with what your diagnosis is. I don't agree with your CT scan. You're more than welcome as a patient to walk out. You don't have to accept what we're saying. But I do want to tell you that we've done the best with the data we've been provided, the direction that the board has given us, and the staff. We have put our best effort into this. So I just want to leave you with that perspective. We are trying with you. And our charge is to help the CSD, the existing customers, and the whole service area. We are here to help you answer the questions as much as we can. And we've gone over and above to try and do that for you. Please read the story maps. Please ask more questions. If you feel our answers are insufficient, we're doing the best we can with very complex questions and a lot of data behind it. So please work with us as well. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of the CSD Board of Directors and our staff, I want to thank you all, especially those of you who stayed for the duration. And more to come. Have a good evening. Be safe. Going home, please.